Dr. Rock's Radio Show. Thursday, 8 p.m. on peoplesinternetradio.com. We go to 11.
Well, good evening and a very warm welcome one and all to Dr. Rock's Radio Show here on peoplesinternetradio.com. That was Hot for Teacher by Van Halen, because in the first half or so of tonight's show, we are going to be having a bit of a look at what the World Management Team have in mind for the future of education and families and schools, which is actually a lot more entertaining than it sounds, or stirring, should we say. Before that was Emerson, Lake and Palmer and Benny the Bouncer, a couple of people having a serious scrap, which ended up with somebody working as the bouncers for St. Peter's Gates. A sad story, but something that we seem to see more and more around us. And before that, Slaughterhouse from the Georgia Satellites, because I think if you're looking at it in anything less than askance, it appears to me that that is where we are. Which is why I'm approaching tonight's show, really, because, as I say, I want to kick off looking at a plan which seems to me to be basically a penetration test for every single dwelling that has a young individual in it. That's what it looks like to me. Although it's a US document, we know the World Management Team works across the world, and already under the, I think, what are they calling it, the named person plans, it is, and assigned named state guardians for every single youngster, that it's already making its appearance in Scotland. And it seems also that a different approach is being taken in Wales, but the same thing's probably on the horizon here as well. Once we've had a look at that, and Synchro's going to help us by reading a few sections from it. The report itself is only 18 pages long, but it was tremendously difficult to get through. It really is like some Jedi Knight whispering in your ear that you really don't need to see this, you know. Horribly repetitive, very, very bland, and kind of looks like a fluffy toy at first glance, but once you start picking the bones out of it, you're definitely dealing with a grenade, in my opinion. So that's kind of the local, if you like, how this stuff is getting serious, and it's getting seriously closer to more and more people's dwellings as time goes by. I don't want to spend a little time considering a thing from the Thrive community, which is a very interesting list of holistic doctors and many other people who appear to be suffering from untimely deaths, which is, if you like, a look at the slightly bigger picture that surrounds what it is that they're planning for education. We're also hopefully going to be hearing a short pod on our security and the separation of powers in the state from Simon Spaniard of the White Rabbit Trust. He seems to be stirring in his burrow as the days get longer and the sun comes up again. And he's launched a new website, which hopefully I'll be able to tell you a bit about as well. And I'd like to finish off, so long as there's time, with one of Robert Sproul's latest postings on YouTube, which is a recorded conversation that he had with the Financial Ombudsman. And that is because there's intended to be a bit of a narrative drive to this, from problem to a solution, because I think that the more we hear about what's going on, the more we read these actual guidance notes every now and then, the more we realise that the time for action is upon us now. And I think, as has been included by many a host on PIR over the years, any action that is taken really has to be taken by the individual and by lots of us. So quite a lot of stuff to get through, really. There's a lot of different voices to listen to at the end of each sort of short segment. I'll play a tune just to give you a bit of a break, because it's a bit hairy like, but I have worked hard at picking tunes that I particularly want to play at that particular point in the show. So it all kicked off for me. There seems to be an enormous amount of really quite interesting stuff appearing on YouTube nowadays, but this particular one kicked off for me with a lady called Lisa Haven, who has posted the, what was really the starting point of all of this, a YouTube called World Governments Issue War Against, and then there's an ellipsis, three dots, you won't believe who and how they are doing it, with an exclamation mark. And I thought, oh, that sounds a bit hysterical. But actually, when you listen to what she highlights, it's only a 5 or 6 minute little audio that she put up, when you listen to the bits of it that she's chosen to highlight, you can see why it was that she was so excited. So I'll post the link for the vid in the chat box whilst it's playing, but if you put World Governments Issue War Against and three dots, you'll probably find it. Lisa Haven herself is also quite interesting. She's got a website called lisahavennews.net, which is a Christian site, so it deals with the Nephilim, a lot of conspiracy stories, and actually I found a whole load of very interesting. I was wandering around in there for a fair bit, and I think she writes, she's one of the main contributors to beforeitsnews.com as well, which has also come up with several interesting things as time gone by. But anyway, here it is, the thing that lobbed me down this particular bit of the rabbit hole, and we're going to be exploring it a bit as the show goes on. This is Lisa Haven and her recent YouTube posting. Like I say, I'll put the link in the chat box whilst it plays, only 5 or 6 minutes long. So I shall be back with you very shortly.
Earlier this year, I put out a report that exposed hellish plans by our government and blows the lid on our freedom here in America. In this report, I delve through a draft document that was put together by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the U.S. Department of Education called Draft Policy Statements on Family Engagement from the Early Years to the Early Grades. This document is horrifying. It enforces the idea of having periodic home visits in parents' homes by teachers, and also demands that the government gets involved in the lives of the parents from birth all the way up to age 18. And it enforces a type of community child rearing. On page 1 of the document, they make it clear that parents are, quote, equal partner. It is the position of the department that all early childhood programs and schools recognize families as, quote, equal partners in improving child development. On page 4, it furthers the idea that family engagement is no longer, quote, supplementary, but that the government should get involved and engaged. It states, the perception that family engagement practices are supplemental rather than necessary for successfully promoting children's learning and development. Institutions that serve young children may place low priority on family engagement because they perceive their mission as narrowly focused on the child and miss the notion that children, especially very young children, live in the context of their families, and their experiences are not independent of but intertwined with those of their families. There are few requirements and limited official guidance at the local, state, and federal levels to support implementation of these policies and practices, with some exceptions. Many state program, district, and school policies make ambiguous references to, quote, family engagement and do not provide concrete definitions or guidance on practices and policies that promote family engagement. On page 7, it goes on to reveal the implementation of evidence-based parenting interventions and the rigorous evaluating of parent-child activity. It states, implementing evidence-based parenting interventions across early childhood program. Parenting interventions should be based on communities, needs, and strengthen families' roles as children's first and most important teachers, advocates, and nurturers. Rigorously evaluating family engagement strategies to identify and scale best practices. On page 10, it discusses hiring a, quote, family specialist. It states they may include hiring a family engagement specialist or designating an existing staff member to be responsible for ensuring that systematic family engagement plans are well managed, executed, and continuously improved. This individual could facilitate technical assistance and staff professional development, coordinate family support services, including support for parenting, and refer families to social services. We all know how good they have been for the community. Page 13, and probably the most disturbing part of this document, states that to support ongoing relationship building with family, programs and schools should conduct periodic home visits so that teachers and families can get to know each other and communicate about the child's goals, strengths, communities, and progress. If home visits are not possible for all families, schools, or programs should require that teachers or providers and families communicate at the beginning of the year to ensure the relationship in starting in a positive way. This document is horrifying, to say the least, but if you believe it won't happen here in America, guess again. It is already happening in places in the United Kingdom. According to www.christian.org.uk, kids are to face creepy questions under named person plan. This plan that Scotland plans on initiating sounds exactly like the draft you just heard about in America. This includes questioning children about their private lives, where they are asked to fill out intrusive questions about what goes on in their families. Younger children will be coaxed to divulge information through the use of cards, songs, and games, while other children will face a series of questions on their home life, their sexual health, and whether or not they feel close to their family members. The information will be stored in a school database, and then each child will be assigned a state guardian from birth to age 18 to look after the child's well-being. But that's not all they plan on intruding on. According to another report put out by the Christian Institute, the Welsh government plans to monitor church group, and they have launched a consultation on plans to regulate out-of-school education settings. This will include drama groups, music classes, any extracurricular activities, including church youth activities. Conservatives have warned that if this plan goes ahead in England, it could be used to punish Christians who teach the biblical definition of marriage. All this to say that the attack on family is going worldwide. Not only are we faced with problems here in America, but in the United Kingdom and abroad as well. What's their goal? Well, ultimately, to control the family and have parents so afraid of government intrusion that they can't even raise their children appropriately. This is the ultimate attack, not only on families, but also on Christian views. Thanks again for tuning in. This is Lisa Haven signing off.
As she said, that was Lisa Havens, and she was talking about the draft national policy document for family engagement in early years to the early grades. And I think she did a pretty good summary of the document there, picked on some very interesting bits, and they're mostly bits that we're going to concentrate on in small chunks as we move forward. One of the first things she hit on was that there's few requirements and limited official guidance at local, state or federal levels for any of this. That's because they will be creating this using technical advice notes and all sorts of other little pamphlets, which will in the long run be used by or various panels and the rest of it, I'm sure, to impose an ever-shifting number of requirements on anybody who joins such a scheme as this. She says they don't provide concrete definitions or guidance on practices and policies that promote family engagement. Well, one of the things when we were talking about the One World Development Policy the other day, we were mentioning that one of the problems that one of the things that's specifically challenging about it is that everything has been defined down to the finest degree to, so that it can be measured and ticked boxed and acted upon. That's my feeling that we're probably dealing with a similar system here, and the very language of the document itself, if you read all 18 pages of it, you'll realise that the vocabulary being used is actually quite limited, and I suspect that one of the reasons for that is so that things can be defined and measured. You want to make sure that you describe the same thing as the same thing all the way through an 18-page document. You are going to come across the same phrases over and over again, which is awfully wearisome. But if one was to try to write, I guess, slightly more colourful prose and make it a bit more interesting, maybe a bit more exact, it would be, in all likelihood, a lot harder, I suspect, to enforce. On the other side of the no definitions, no policies bit, I suppose I kind of wandered off for a bit into American sex education whilst I was looking into all of this. And it became apparent that there's no guidance there either, really, across the states. And so as a result, there are several states that just simply teach, don't do it. That's basically it. And the full gamut right away across the range is can be found, really. But lots of states, for example, are not allowed to actually, physically show a condom, say. So there's none of this condom with a banana or a courgette nonsense. In fact, I did see whilst I was looking at this one video, which showed quite an inventive school teacher demonstrating the technique using his foot and his sock. You do really wonder where it is that we've got to with the education system that we've got, don't you? And this is the kind of thing that we're going to be talking about integrating completely and thoroughly with family life. If that's how they're dealing with something as basically fundamental as sex education, you can already begin to imagine that we're likely to have a bit of problem integrating this sort of stuff. She talked about evidence-based parenting interventions, which we will come across again in a bit, but I decided to try and find out what an evidence-based parenting intervention was and discovered that, lo and behold, there is a 98-page guidance leaflet called A Compendium of Parenting Interventions, which I must admit I found totally impenetrable. But you'll see the context of that is basically you can tell it's a stick. It's a parenting intervention. The evidence-based thing, again, the evidence I would assume for this sort of thing is, again, going to be constantly changing if this kind of rigorous monitoring system is introduced. Effectively, it is my belief that any guidance that is mentioned in this prospectus will end up being effectively a legislative instrument of some sort, such as happened when we went to that public inquiry and we noticed there was somebody had written a book called something like The Planning Manual for Bridges and Roads, which was just that. It was a collection of advice that had been kind of garnered together and published into a book, and the book had become the definitive guide. The book had become effectively a set of rules, and once again, it's causing enough trouble with land and buildings and access and all that kind of stuff out in the countryside without having the same techniques actually literally brought home to roost amongst your offspring. They talk about rigorously evaluating family engagement strategies to identify and scale best practice. All the way through the document, they're emphasising the kind of individuality of people and how important it is that, that everything gets taken into account. And yet we come across phrases like identify and scale best practice. This is never a very good sign because it means that you find little things that work and then try to apply them across the piece. And generally, again, I think this is one of the most basic problems we've got is that we have a one-size-fits-no-one society. And trying to introduce such uniform methods and stuff is generally to the disadvantage of any individuals who are unlucky enough to have to encounter and deal with the system. They imagine that it's going to be well managed, well executed and continuously improved. Well, that's a great idea, isn't it? Just like everything else we see going on around us, I suppose. We have heard a bit about the named person plans in Scotland on PIR over recent weeks. The newspaper that they were quoting was an online newspaper, I think, called A Christian Institute, and they said that younger children will be coaxed to divulge information through the use of prompt cards, songs and games designed to familiarise them with the Scottish Government's teaching on well-being. Well, I'm sure Laurie could come on and give us chapter and verse on Scottish Government's teaching on well-being. I mean, I suspect that that phrase in itself could probably be the subject of a radio show, but luckily we're not going to hang around there. Older children will face a series of questions apparently on their home life, sexual health, and whether or not they feel close to their parents. You can just imagine what these forms are going to be, can't you? I mean, at no stage through any of this does anybody mention any form filling or anything like that, but I guess we're probably going to be dealing with things that are not dissimilar to the census that we all saw a few years back, which was, if I remember rightly, about 40 pages of extremely intrusive questions. It's not difficult to imagine, though, is it, that the kind of questions that are going to be asked here are going to be even more intrusive and possibly even more useful for coming up with new things to tax, new things to charge, new things to fine, and new things to generally punish. So although the whole thing sounds quite woolly. Once we, like I say, once you start kind of picking the bones out of it, you come across something that's a good deal more muscular than it might originally appear to be. So here's the first 2.5 minute chunk of synchro dealing with the kind of intro, if you like, the sort of description of what this thing's supposed to be. Like I say, it's just short of 3 minutes long, this one. Then I'll come back to you and we'll probably have a quick tune then. What I've done with this is I've tried to pick the bits that I thought would be most interesting to us, but I've also kind of carved it up a bit so that some of the repetitions removed. I'm hoping that will maintain the kind of interest. But here we go. Here's Synchro giving us a bit of a reading.
The purpose of this policy statement is to provide recommendations from the United States Departments of Health and Human Services and Education on systematically engaging families in their children's development, learning and wellness across early childhood and elementary education settings. When families and the institutions where children learn partner in meaningful ways, children have more positive attitudes towards school, stay in school longer, have better attendance, and experience more school success. U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and U.S. Department of Education recognize the critical role of family engagement in children's success in early and elementary education systems. As such, both agencies have developed research-based family engagement frameworks to guide the development of effective family engagement policies and practices. These frameworks are rather snappily entitled the Head Start Parent Family and Community Engagement Framework, brought to you by the nice people at Health and Human Services, and the Dual Capacity Building Framework for Family-School Partnerships, which is more how the folk at the Department of Education see things. They go on. We refer to family engagement as the systematic inclusion of families as partners in children's development, learning and wellness. Engagement is enabled by positive relationships between families and staff in the institutions where children learn. The goal of family engagement is to support family wellness and children's learning and development. Core strategies include 1. Reviewing the research base that supports effective family engagement in children's learning, development and wellness. 2. Identifying core principles of effective family engagement practices to drive successful policy and program development. 3. Providing recommendations and community-based early childhood programs to implement effective family engagement. And 4. Highlighting resources and early childhood programs to build capacity to effectively partner with families.
So I guess the basic proposal is to try and improve the quality of education by integrating family life and schools. There are several problems with this, I think, which we'll encounter on the way through. But the first thing they do is they point out that they recognise families as equal partners in their children's development, learning and wellness. Equal partners, right from the word go. It's an interesting term for them to be using, I think. And are they not assuming the role of partnership? Because this seems to me to be, if you like, a bit of a power grab going on. It's been happening for a while, but this seems to be the final move. They say that make it clear, I think, what their aims are. When families and the institutions where children learn partner in a meaningful way, which is a very, very ugly sentence, I think, children have more positive attitudes towards school, stay in school longer, have better attendance, and experience more school success. Well, all of this is perhaps all well and good if we assume that what's going on is actually education rather than conditioning and training. A brief internet search for the words core curriculum will pull up just exactly where the American education system sees itself going at the moment. There are written, stated plans and a lot of interviews with people who know what they're talking about and stuff, stating that basically they don't really intend to take youngsters any longer beyond, say, grade 6 or 7. And if you look at the standard of writing that was being used by people like the Founding Fathers of America, I doubt you'd find anybody who could write to that standard nowadays. And they were probably many, many grades on from grade 6 or 7. So whether the emphasis here on improving attitudes towards school and getting them to stay there longer and attend more often and all the rest of it, you know, people quite often have very good reasons for not attending school. Talking to the youngsters nowadays, that seems to be especially the case. It also appears from a cursory look around, and I don't think anybody seems to have taken any figures since 2003, as far as I can tell. If anybody in the chat box knows different, do let me know. But I gather that American literacy rates have remained pretty much unchanged for the last 10 years or so. So how good the education system's doing in itself is open to question, whether it has in any sense bought itself the right to start regarding anybody as a partner and start invading homes, is anybody's guess. As for the emphasis, which comes up again and again, children's development, learning and wellness is one of the phrases that is repeated ad nauseam. And we know about vaccines, don't we? We know that that wellness is possibly not one of the things that is uppermost in mind of the world management team when it comes up with these plans. Like they say, they recognise rather kindly the crucial role of family engagement in children's success. You know, the fact that they, almost the fact that they have to write such a thing down, raises one's suspicions and about their motivations, really. They point out the family engagement frameworks are to guide the development of effective family engagement policies and practices. Also, two words that come up again and again. The goal of family engagement, they say, is to support family wellness and children's learning and development. And that's the kind of overall tone of the thing. If you were, it's very, very difficult, as I say, to remain kind of engaged with a document like this. But basically, I suspect if you were to scoot over the top of it, that's the sort of impression you get. That it would be easy to come away with the impression, shall we say, that that this document does indeed have a goal of family engagement to support family wellness and children's learning and development. But A, there's a lot of sentences in it which make it a lot clearer what they're actually trying to do. And B, if we look at our experience and the precedents around us, we can see that generally speaking, we might take a bit of convincing that, as I say, there's any interest in actual development and actual wellness here. Although they have done the research, as we'll hear in the second reading that Syngro's done for us. I thought their core strategies were quite interesting. As far as I remember, these were four that all came in a row. I didn't take any out. The first thing they start with is reviewing the research base. Again, my suspicions are automatically aroused when people start talking about looking at research bases instead of looking at actual individuals in actual situations. One way or the other, there is going to be a net of data collection over all of this. And whilst we might imagine, as Jimmy put in the chat box a little bit earlier, that you know, community child rearing and stuff has existed since time immemorial, when everybody used to look at everybody else's kids in the street and all that kind of stuff. And that is the kind of memory I think that this document is trying to reach towards. But we're not going to be talking, I don't think, about all providers, community specialists, teachers, families and students all getting on well together, all knowing each other and functioning as a kind of biological unit. We're going to be talking about trying to imitate that kind of system using data, forms, computers and specialists. So the first of their core strategies is to review the research base. The second one is to identify principles of effective family engagement practices. Why? To drive successful policy and program development. Full stop. I don't see much mention in there of where, what good it's supposed to do families and children apart from a general overall aim to do that. Number three was provide recommendations and programs to implement effective family engagement, and then highlight resources and programs to build capacity to partner with families. So all of that lot is basically simply to do with implementing the policy. We can already see the kind of direction they want to go in, because it is about the research base and it is fundamentally about driving successful policy and program developments, just like we've seen with TAN6 and the One Planet development. It's like It's going to be like a hugely complex contract, basically, which people sign up to, then self-monitor. Whoopee, that's what I say. I think we're probably coming up for a tune break before going on to the next bit. I'll have a quick look at the chat box. But before I do that, I'd just like to put out a big shout to Joan, who I met when I was up in Glasgow recently. And apparently she's had a heart attack and technically left us for a while, but has been brought back to life and is now recovering well at home. Thanks to Laurie for all of that news. It came in just as the show was starting, so sorry for being a bit remiss on that. Laurie also says, and I think this is a great idea, that she'd really like to get a bundle of flowers together for Joan. And if anybody wants to hit the donate button, which is available on the People's Internet Radio website, and mark it for Joan, then hopefully she'll get a big bundle of colour wherever it is she is. And get well, Joan. Get well soon, Joan. Bounce back, mate. All the best to you from everybody here at the surgery. So, on that note, I think I'm going to play a noisy tune. I know I played this one a couple of weeks ago, but I'm going to play it again because I really like it. And it's called X-Ray Visions by Clutch from a recent album, Psychic Warfare. And one of the lines repeated is, "Psychic warfare is real. Are they educating our children? Or is education just another word for a brand of psychic warfare?" Go for it, Clutch. Oh, yes. I do like that tune. And psychic warfare is real. That is probably one of the things when I entered this game that I was probably a little bit askance about. There were several subjects. However, once again, just a brief internet search will reveal plenty of declassified stuff from the 40s and 50s to show you just how far they can go with that. But if it makes you feel more comfortable, you might just think about it as marketing. And you might consider what the difference is between marketing and propaganda as well. But basically, it's all psychic warfare. So, next little chunk from Synchro, reading from the draft policy document for family engagement, deals with the, is one of the more cheery bits actually, because it deals with the research they're using to put this document together. And as with so much of this stuff, it shows that the solution is within our grasp, because the knowledge of what to do is actually there. The only thing that's not happening is actually doing it. So here we got 4 minutes of the research background to this particular policy, which, like I say, is it's good to know they know this stuff. It really is. Back with you shortly.
Research highlights. Families' engagement with their children has strong and sustained impacts on children's development, learning and wellness. Studies indicate that warm, responsive and sensitive parenting promotes social, emotional competence and academic success. Fathers' positive engagement in their children's learning in particular has been found to have positive effects on children's cognition, language and social, emotional development. Other studies find that specific learning activities such as reading and talking to young children are associated with positive outcomes. For example, infants and toddlers who are read to more often have better language and cognition skills than their peers who are read to less often. High-quality verbal interactions between young children and their caregivers predicts vocabulary size and school readiness later in life. Children of families who engage in these early learning activities at home and have materials available to enrich these experiences show more advanced vocabulary and literacy skills. Mutually promoting these and other learning activities in the classroom and in the home, facilitated by all of the adults in children's lives, is a central component of effective family engagement and contributes to children's learning and developmental outcomes. Mutually reinforcing learning at home and in the community is enabled by positive relationships between families and teachers and providers. Research indicates that families' positive attitudes about schools are associated with children's improved performance at school. Families' secure housing, health care, and access to nutritious food have positive effects on children's development, and lack of access to these basic resources can have adverse effects. Parental health and mental health impact parenting and children's outcomes. For example, parental depression may contribute to less responsive parenting and is associated with anxiety and depression in children. Other parental mental health difficulties, such as anxiety, trauma, and substance abuse, can also contribute to children's behavioural and academic challenges. Financial stability is also key to family engagement. Increased family income during the early childhood years has been found to improve children's academic achievement, behaviour, and foster mental health. It is much more difficult to engage in children's learning if a family's basic needs are not met. This research indicates that the institutions where children learn cannot fully ignore family wellness if they want to meaningfully engage families and fulfill their mission to prepare children for school and academic success. While some of these needs may be met in schools and early childhood programs through on-site comprehensive services, others can be met through partnerships with organizations and specialists in the community. Meeting families where they are, promoting their wellness alongside their children's through connections to community resources, and partnering with them on their children's learning and development will result in optimal outcomes for children.
Will result in optimal outcomes for children, yes indeed. So you've clearly identified, again, a bit like the One Planet Development Policy, there's clearly some idea as to what could be done there, it seems to me. Why not just fix the variables that they've successfully identified by the research? You know, why not concentrate all the resource that might be needed to create so-called family engagement on, say, encouraging conditions that foster warm, responsive and sensitive parenting, you know? Why not cease encouraging the dissolution of families and the ever-increasing number of absent and often desperate fathers? You know, why not endeavour to give grown-ups the necessary time to engage with their offspring? They clearly recognise that it's necessary and helpful, and it never used to be necessary for both adults in a dwelling to work full-time to keep bread on the table and fuel in the grate. It didn't. And, you know, if they wish to enrich learning environments, then at the very least they could stop closing the bloody libraries and selling off all the books, for example. They might do something about the unmitigated tripe and disinformation that's pouring into people's sitting rooms from the TV whilst they're at it. And I don't think they should really be talking to us about anxiety, stress and family wellness until they have started to sort this sort of thing out. I mean, it is nice to know that the research recognises that secure housing, healthcare and access to nutrition, nutritional food, you know, have got positive effects on children's development. That's good to know. But it's a conclusion that's woefully unevident in public policy of more or less any sort, it seems to me anyway. So, you know, why not try sorting out the bankruptsters rather than throwing families out on the street? And perhaps claims of having some kind of interest in healthcare might carry a bit more weight if the medical doctors offering genuine demonstrable solutions were not being offed in apparently extraordinary numbers, something which we'll get onto in a bit. And if as many as people as possible, especially the most vulnerable, were not being injected on a regular basis with at best degenerative and oftentimes lethal vaccines. You know, it's difficult to accept claims of an interest in nutrition when the people who are making the claiming apparently get very little training or education in, say, nutrition, hydration and the immune system. And why can't we just stop doing what's being done? You know, how much cheaper can it get? There's a lot of evidence to suggest that things might improve. You know, fewer things go on fire when the firemen are on strike. Fewer people die when doctors go on strike. Could there be a general lesson in this? If we were simply to stop doing all the nonsense that we're doing at the moment and preferably give us our money back, we could handle it. Sure. As for access to nutritious food, this again, it was not a problem in the very recent past. If the Department for Health and Human Services and the Department of Education are genuinely interested in I don't know, properly constituted people, then putting food on the shelves instead of piles of ambiguously labelled food stuff would be a grand idea. It'd be well helpful. We don't need to have our dwellings accessed. We don't need to have our lives and those of our offspring monitored, recorded and tailored to the whims of men and women who are quite simply and absolutely totally, it seems to me, taking the piss. Excuse my language. I mean, how good are these people at their jobs? How excellent have the outcomes proved to be in the past? I mean, would we employ anyone, even one of these people, to clean a wheelie bin? Probably not. So why are we letting them anywhere near the wee ones, you know, let alone actually in the house, assuming responsibility for that which is really ours alone? And then I have absolutely no doubt at all who it is that's going to be held responsible for any behaviours that arise from this crazy idea. Where did I put my sickle-sharp boar tusks? I'm going to play some Hawkwind. Back with you in 5 minutes. Oh. Psy power from Hawkwind there. To bring to mind the fact that I know some people who were way beyond school when they were at school. They really were. They spent their time sitting under the desk because genuinely school didn't have anything to teach them or didn't have any of the right stuff for them or whatever. Some of them were genuinely really clever people, even as small folk. And, you know, the more dumbed down the school becomes along the lines of things like the core curriculum, which once again I think we can be pretty sure is happening here, the more dumbed down the school becomes, the more people there are going to be like that and who really don't want to be there. And I've met some truly remarkable youngsters myself. I've read about many more. It does seem to me that as well as the schools being dumbed down, some of the youngsters are actually pretty startlingly different in the way they approach the world. And they too are going to have serious problems actually engaging with the school system. There were one or two bits in the last reading from Synchro that bear a bit of comment as well. Again, there was plenty of emphasis on improving school readiness, on getting them to improve their performance at school. And if we have any suspicion at all that what school is basically conditioning of one sort or another, then we have to wonder whether improved performance is a good thing. You know, I honestly would tend to have a look at the people who are revolting against such a system and go, hey, well, maybe this is one of the ones who's got something to offer. But maybe that's just me. So if we think it's conditioning and not education, then actually getting people more ready for it and to perform better at it and stick in it longer and all that kind of stuff is a questionable aim. There was also what I think to be quite a lot of implicit value judgments in there. There was the phrase parental health and mental health impact parenting and children's outcomes. For example, parental depression may contribute to less responsive parenting. Less responsive parenting, they've obviously tried to put a nice gloss over that. They don't want to sound like they're having a go. But by and large, we can expect behaviour in such a system that is compliant to be rewarded and behaviour that is perceived to be non-compliant to be not rewarded. You'll be expected to have some of those parental interventions or whatever it is. And it's not just bloody parental health and mental health, you know, that has an effect on children. I mean, like school itself isn't associated in any way with anxiety and depression, of course. I mean, or exams, say, or homework, or demotivated teachers, or bullying, or lack of resource, or witless politicians, or indeed state-instigated pressure on parents and children, which isn't going to help itself. It's just not quite right. Do you know what I mean? I hope you're with me on this. I know that Synchro quite enjoyed reading these bits, because sometimes I think when I look at these things, you know, is it actually worth this effort? But this is a... This looks like a seriously invasive attempt, like I say, at grabbing control. Parental mental health difficulties such as anxiety, trauma and substance abuse contribute to children's behavioural challenges. So mental health difficulties now include substance abuse. I think we can read from that. And once again, their concern there is that contributes to children's behavioural challenges. You can't help thinking that there must be an aspect of this which is maybe being designed to sweep up a few more children. There's certainly a lot of places where people can go wrong in this by the look of it. Of course, financial stability is key to family engagement. That's why they keep the finances so fundamentally unstable. They were stable, you know, up until the 1920s when the banksters seized control of the money supply. We didn't really have inflation at that point. Apparently, you could buy a dollar in 1820 would buy you broadly the same as it would have bought you in 1910. So financial instability is built into the system. So another thing that doesn't involve invading people's homes and asking them daft questions is to fix the financial system so that people aren't under this kind of stress in the first place. And then they say institutions where children learn cannot ignore family wellness. So it's not just the wellness of your children, it's the family wellness as well. And the word wellness is being used all the time. It's kind of like 1984, you know. You can't help feeling that we're dealing with words like plus good and double plus good and all of that. But institutions where children learn cannot ignore family wellness if they want to fulfill their mission. What is their mission? To prepare children for school and academic success. Once again, is this what we want our children preparing for in the first place? Then they say, well, some of these needs may be met in schools and early childhood programs through, what did they call them? They called them on-site comprehensive services, and they do talk later in the documents, which don't go into informing family hubs, where people can enjoy mutual learning sessions and all that kind of stuff. Well, I wonder that, what that'll be. On-site comprehensive services, I mean, currently speaking, you'd be lucky actually to find any kind of service being provided by any of these suckers, it seems to me, let alone a comprehensive on-site service or indeed a comprehensive service of any sort. And that's another thing about this document, is that what it's imagining, there's just no example of it, even in really quite small clusters of organisations, in people getting this kind of communication and cooperation together. It's not to say it can't be done in a worthwhile cause, of course, probably it can. But I suspect that this is not it. So we'll have another little bit of synchro reading. We'll come and have a quick look in the chat box. This one, again, about 5 minutes long, and it deals with the basic, what they regard as the principles of family engagement, and it contains quite a lot more, really. Interestingly, what I call interestingly veiled stuff. So here's synchro coming back at you with another one.
Principles of effective family engagement practices. 1. Create continuity for children and families. Implement a vision for family engagement that begins prenatally and continues across settings and throughout a child's developmental and educational experiences. 2. Value equal partnerships between families and professionals. Combine professional expertise with familial expertise to promote shared learning and responsibility for children's healthy development, learning and wellness. Encourage two-way communication by valuing family input on all aspects of the child's life and development, including their culture, traditions and home language. 3. Develop goal-oriented relationships that are linked to development and learning. Successful relationships focus on family strengths and are grounded by a shared commitment to children's well-being and success. Jointly develop, monitor, and work on children's goals with families, and identify specific strategies that support children's development and learning at home and in the classroom. 4. Prioritize engagement around children's social, emotional, and behavioral health. Engage families around children's social, emotional, and behavioural health. Ensure constant monitoring and communication regarding children's social, emotional, and behavioural health. Ensure that children's social, emotional, and behavioural needs are met and that families and staff are connected with relevant community partners such as early childhood mental health consultants and children's medical homes. 6. Build staff competencies in engaging with families. Prioritize professional development that helps staff engage parents as capable, competent partners. Strengthen staff's ability to form positive, goal-oriented relationships with all families. 7. Build families' capabilities and connections. Provide opportunities for families to build their knowledge and skills and engage in shared learning with other families on governance or organisational family leadership and advocacy. Ensure families are connected to each other for peer support and social capital and to services in the community as needed. 8. Systemically embed effective family engagement strategies within programs, schools, and with community partners. Align, integrate, and coordinate family engagement strategies across communities and all aspects of programming, including, but not limited to, involving families in governance, establishing positions that focus exclusively on family engagement, identifying specific family engagement responsibilities and professional development opportunities for all roles across the system, providing families with multiple and diverse opportunities for involvement, creating inviting physical environments that are welcoming and culturally and linguistically responsive, and establishing formal partnerships with community partners such as social service agencies, medical homes, and libraries that promote wellness and adult learning and enhance children's learning. 9. Continuously learn and improve. Continuously improve integrated family engagement practices by collecting and analysing data to guide decision-making and policy change and to inform technical assistance and professional development. I think that's worth reading again. Continuously improve integrated family engagement practices by collecting and analysing data to guide decision-making and policy change and to inform technical assistance and professional development.
So, the principles of family engagement, lots of comment in the chat box about this sounding double plus ungood and all that. Sam, the identity known of the actual author or authors of this shite, I'll post the link in there again when I put the next one on, if I remember. Nina Lodes put, I bet the people who come up with this stuff have never enjoyed a good rip-roaring fart. No, indeed, no, and it sounds like it'd do them no end of bloody good, Ian, it really does. Unfortunately, though, as we're hopefully gathering, it isn't just hot air, is it? Although the the overall impression is one of kind of like candy floss and fluff and just it's like interference in the mind, actually inside it are sentences that tell you, like that last one that Synchro read a couple of times, tell you exactly kind of what they've got in mind. Pat, thanks, the kids are now teaching the parents the way forward, which is of course exactly, I suspect, what this kind of system is aiming to prevent. We're really working on behalf of them, and they're where the hope is, really, at this point. So their first principle, under number one, create continuity for children and families. Well, we understand about continuity, don't we? We know they like to think that we progress from one thing to another, and you get your O-levels, you get your A-levels, you get your degree, you get your PhD, then you get a job, and you steadily develop so you can pay your mortgage off and end up completely happy by the time you're 80, if you manage to survive having everything taken off you on the way through. Create opportunity for create continuity for children and families. Implement a vision, it says. Excellent. Implement a vision. They've been very careful with their words elsewhere, but I mean, go right ahead, guys. Tell me how you're going to do it. Implement a vision. Wicked. Implement a vision, what's more, that begins prenatally and continue throughout a child's developmental and educational experiences. This is exactly the time that we do not want the state involved. This is exactly the time when we don't, in these years of development and education. It's savage, it is. Value equal partnerships between families and professionals. Promote shared responsibility for children's healthy development, learning and wellness. You do not want to be sharing that responsibility, probably, with anybody other than close family, I would suggest. Actually, it's another thing. All through this document, it says specifically with the father. And I'm really wondering whether they're going to do this turn it on the head thing. They go, oh, well, look, all the research says that being with father is good for them. Therefore, not being with father isn't good for them. And at that point, you start getting to be under a little pressure as to what happens with your children. And loads of this stuff could be used that way. Oh, look, this is what's good for them. It's not happening here. So something bad is therefore happening. Worth thinking about. Encourage input on all aspects of the child's life and development, including their culture, traditions and home language. So now we've not just got children's wellness, offspring's wellness and family wellness and social and behavioural things that we're keeping an eye on. We're also monitoring input on all aspects, including culture, traditions and home language. Just think of all this information being fed into the digital incubus, folks. Just think of all this stuff going in there and what it's going to tell them about what's going on in your home. Develop goal-oriented relationships. Goal-oriented relationships means something is being expected of you. People who don't score enough goals lose their place on the team. Jointly develop, monitor and work on the children's goals. Jointly develop, monitor and work on. How many people are actually going to have the time to do what is necessary to make this thing manifest? My real hope is at this point to encourage them not to engage. The whole point of this is that this particular document, more than anything I've read, even Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, has made me realise that that we've got to take up the pen and the shield one way or the other. You know, this is what we're dealing with. It's serious. It certainly is. Just like Rob Sproul's been saying, and we'll be hearing from him later. Ensure constant monitoring and communication regarding children's social, emotional and behavioural health. So, like I say, it's not just their academic progress and their school behaviour. There's all sorts of value judgments that are going to be necessary to measure these things. Make sure that staff are connected with relevant community partners such as early childhood mental health consultants and children's medical homes. Once again, are those not interesting choices of local partners? There must be all manner of other things that could be put in there. Because again, this looks like a development of the sickness industry. You know, if the first things that are going to spring to mind when we're talking about community partners are child mental health consultants and children's medical homes, once again, we get a sense of a direction that might not be entirely desirable. They want to prioritise professional development. Another thing, just like gas fitters and electricians and all the rest of them have to get themselves retrained at the cost of several hundred pounds every year, that's what's going to be going on here as well. Prioritise professional development. We are creating a new cash cow. Again, engage parents as capable, competent partners and strengthen staff's ability to form positive and, once again, goal-orientated relationships. Even the relationships are goal-oriented. What kind of relationship do we know? What kind of real relationship do we know that's actually goal-oriented? They don't work too well. And anyway, who's defining the goals? How often are the goals going to be redefined? How consistent are the goals going to be across the piece, given some of the stuff we had earlier? Provide opportunities for families to engage in shared learning. These are the community hubs they're talking about. Systemically embed effective family engagement strategies within programs, schools and with community partners everywhere. Systemically embed, align, integrate and coordinate family engagement strategies across communities and all aspects of programming, including but not limited to, and then there's a very big list of chirpy sounding things, but align, integrate, coordinate strategies across communities and all aspects of programming. See, sometimes what they're actually doing really shines out, doesn't it? We want to establish formal partnerships with community partners, this time such as social service agencies, once again medical homes, and then rather bizarrely libraries, but that's because they want to add the phrase to promote family wellness, they want to add the phrase and adult learning. So libraries got stuck in there as well. And, you know, I guess we have to ask ourselves, don't we, do social services and medical homes enhance children's wellness? Is that really our experience, especially with social services? And I have to have my doubts about mental health services as well. given the number of children or offspring and little ones that are apparently on Ritalin and various other Prozac and God knows what else. And then number nine, the killer, number nine, absolutely brilliant. What a sentence. Continuously improve integrated family engagement practices by collecting and analysing data to guide decision-making and policy change and to inform technical assistance and professional development. Now, in my opinion, you could probably ditch everything we've listened to so far, and if you only read that one sentence, you'd actually have a fair idea of what this document is actually about. Continuously improve means it's going to be continuously changing. Somebody somewhere is going to be defining what improvement is and what improvement isn't. It's now called integrated family engagement because it's right the way across the piece. And it's all going to be done by collecting and analysing data. That data's got to come from somewhere. And we can be sure that it's not only going to be analysed for this particular purpose. I'm sure that it will be full of loads of useful stuff for lots of other things. And why are they doing all of this? They're doing this to guide decision making and policy change. That's what they're doing, and of course policy is policy, it's a way of policing you. And then, and to inform technical assistance and professional development. When we touched on professional development, technical assistance I mentioned a bit earlier on, when we were talking about the One Planet Development Policy and the and actually reporting in perpetuity on all of the variables that were identified when you set your plan up to make sure that reality can be measured to be the same as what it was you proposed at the beginning. Now, it's not just the guidance on roads and bridges. It's mostly TAN 6 that applies to this. It's a Welsh document, and it stands for Technical Advice Notes 6. That is what keeps the One Planet development people in line. If you want to, like I say, scratch a living from the countryside, growing veg, then you've got to prove that you are growing all your veg. You have to prove many, many things. TAN 6, Technical Advice Notes. Are these the same kind of technical advice that this sort of policy is going to be informing, we ask ourselves? And perhaps it's also worth noting that if you don't in Wales stay in line with TAN 6, then you are going to suffer the indignity of an enforcement notice, which will probably come and destroy most of the work you've done on the site, as, alas, is due to happen following that public inquiry we went to late last year. So that's it. That's where it's really at, is continuously improve integrated family engagement practices by collecting and analysing data to guide decision-making and policy change and to inform technical assistance and professional development. That's the cold bones of it. That's the tree and the branches, if you like, before they put the pretty little flowers and the leaves on it. That's what the thing looks like in winter, in my opinion. We've only got one little bit more of that to go, which we'll have after another music break. Which deals with the strategies. It's shorter than the rest, about 3 or 4 minutes, but it deals with how it is that they intend to pull this particular stunt off. But as well as considering the kind of kids that might be implied by Hawkwind's psi power, who might be capable of all sorts of things if they're actually given the space and the facilities and resources necessary to develop whatever skills they have, I'm pretty sure that this extremely lovey-dovey, interagency, teacher, family, pupil kind of huddle is going to come across a few things that are really going to challenge it. I mean, it's talking about like it's existing in some kind of semi-perfect world, which it evidently isn't. And every now and then, it's going to cross somebody who just wants to say no, like this young man from the mid-70s.
You're listening to www.peoplesinternetradio.com, seeking solutions.
Eddie and the Hot Rods and Teenage Depression, preceded by Kill from Albertos Illustrious Paranoias. Engage with that, guys. Bloody engage with that. That's what I say. So, got one little more bit to come from that before we sort of move on a bit and listen to something else. So this is, as I said, I can't remember what all of this stuff is. I've got a note somewhere. Here we go. Yeah, this is their actual strategies for carrying this out, just 3.5 minutes of it, and a bit more synchro for ya.
Strategies for developing family engagement policies at LEA and state level. develop and integrate family engagement indicators into existing data systems. States should collect data about the extent to which early childhood programs and schools are engaging families, the strategies that they are using, and their effectiveness. States can use this data to better understand current practices and policies, strengthen those that are working, and modify those that are not. Recommended monitoring techniques include using a valid assessment tool to measure family engagement and or family teacher or provider relationship quality, and using results to gauge progress and make needed modifications at the organizational or teacher-provider level. Identify supports that will be offered to parents, such as evidence-based parenting interventions or leadership development opportunities. Identify community partners that can provide comprehensive services, such as health, mental health, or housing assistance to meet families' basic needs. And creating diverse opportunities for families to be involved in their child's development, learning and wellness, including opportunities for peer learning and peer networking, and opportunities specifically for fathers, grandparents, young parents, and families with irregular work schedules. Home visits. To support ongoing relationship building with families, programs and schools should conduct periodic home visits so that teachers and families can get to know each other and communicate about children's goals, strengths, challenges and progress. If home visits are not possible for all families, schools or programs should require that teachers or providers and families communicate at the beginning of the year to ensure that the relationship is started in a positive way. LEAs, schools and programs should also ensure that both pre- and continuous in-service professional development includes concrete strategies for building positive relationships with families. School and program administrators should measure their family engagement efforts and the quality of their provider-teacher and family relationships using a valid and reliable assessment tool, such as the FPTRQ, and use the results of those assessments to carefully select professional development strategies that will improve the quality of relationships between teachers, providers, staff, and families. LEAs, schools, and programs should allow staff the time and space to plan for family engagement activities and implement both group and individual activities with families.
Oh, I see. I've pressed the wrong button there. Hold on. There we go. If I do that, that will stop happening. Great. That was Synchro and her last extract from the draft policy for family engagement that's come out of American Education Department and Health and Human Services Department. In the chat box, I think there's been some fairly valid comment. Nick Nomick a while back put in there that this psychobabble must have some power. Surprises me, folks, coming out with this don't get properly heard and slapped. And Pat Valden's put in severely Nick with a £5 hammer. I tend to absolutely agree. But it's psychobabble that's actually coming into our lives. I was saying in the chat box that it's Mark Windows who kind of first brought it to my attention. And so I guess I've been a little bit more alert to it. But this actually coming in on the ground right here. This psychobabble is how they want us to live. I'm so glad you agree with me, Nick, because like I say, you do sometimes have a bit of a doubt when one puts the work into a show like this, but I think it's worth it because people listen to the pods, you know, they do. Slim, thanks Patrick. We could push more antidepressants. Good for profits. Absolutely right. And I think that whilst that might or might not be the case, I think precedent would suggest that we will certainly not see fewer antidepressants and fewer meds being issued as a result of this kind of policy. Wild Swans put, it's all about jobs for the boys to make more jobs for the boys. And the circle goes around and around and around. And again, I think that's absolutely right. all of this stuff, loads and loads of every time something's introduced, it means tons of expense absolutely everywhere, and things that are regarded and treated as expense by government are basically making them money and costing us money. So it is an expense for us. It sure as shit ain't an expense for them, I think. Sam, are the monitors specially trained lizards from Africa? Probably have as much love. Yeah, indeed. Yeah, they can bite a chunk out of you. Yeah, Nick, would rather hear the Mabinogion than this policy. Yeah, well, there you go. Perhaps we might do a bit of Mabinogion, who knows. It's about moving mentally from where the brainwashing stopped working. I know we have to work, but spend the rest of your time doing what you love. I think that's absolutely right, Wild Swan, but one of the problems, one of the reasons why people are under such pressure is that even conservative estimates suggest that we're losing 60-65% of our income. I think it's probably more like 80% is the biggest number I've seen. And personally, I think that if you really take it all into account, it's probably, as people know, will remember, I think it's more like 99% has taken off us. But even at 66%, we're working for 8 months out of 12 for the government. Is it any wonder we're under any stress? Is it any wonder we're having a bit of difficulty engaging with our offspring and all that kind of stuff? Best thing for kids, says Sol, is to keep them away from officialdom. Absolutely right. Keep them out of federated space, which is, I think, where this goes, really. Don't talk to them. Don't open the door. Preferably, don't even think about them. Return to sender. You know, I do not understand your intent. I have no
international
treaty with you. No assured value. No liability. Inviting these people in, signing bits of paper from them, is equivalent to inviting vampires into the home and really needs to be avoided, which is where the Robert Sproul pod comes in. And, of course, the excellent work being done by Cotty and Ray and the Sunday slot on PIR over the last weeks whilst Vin's been sunning his feet or whatever he's been doing. I really do think, however, what's the word, undesirable it sounds, that the time has come to start standing where we need to stand, because otherwise all sorts, I mean, well, we can see what happens when we don't, can't we? We can absolutely see what happens when we don't. Well, some of us can. Some of us seem to think that everything's absolutely fine, which is a bit curious. There you go. So, their strategies. First thing, states should collect data about the extent to which early childhood programs and schools are engaging families. And they want to do this in order to better understand current practices and policies, strengthen those that are working, and modify those that are not. Understand current practices and policies, and strengthen those that are working, and modify those that are not. We'll ignore the split infinitive. That's the least problem I've got with this document, basically. They talk once again about evidence-based parenting interventions or leadership development opportunities. You remember the evidence-based parenting interventions? They came up earlier. When you go chasing them up, you come across a 98-page compendium of parenting interventions, which is, oh, dire, man. Absolutely dire. But here you can see it balanced. Here you can see what they've got in mind. It's either evidence-based parenting interventions, slapped wrists, guys, or it's leadership development opportunities. Take a gold star. Which way have you been jumping? Have you been compliant? Have you been cooperating? Are you going to get an intervention or are you going to get a development opportunity? Once again, they want to identify community partners that can provide comprehensive services. And this time they've gone for health, mental health and housing assistance. And then creating diverse opportunities to be involved in their child's development, learning and wellness, specifically for fathers, once again. But after specifically for fathers, it says, comma, grandparents, young parents and families with irregular work schedules. Ooh. Yeah, but it does say specifically for fathers. I'm interested by that. Then there's the dreaded home visit, where they basically say that they're planning on kind of popping round to support ongoing relationship building, of course. Then LEA schools and programs should also ensure that both pre- and continuous in-service professional development, again, includes concrete strategies. What do you suppose a concrete strategy is? School and program administrators should measure their family management efforts and the quality of their provider, teacher and family relationships using a valid and reliable assessment tool. So they're actually going to try and measure the quality of relationships between providers and teachers and families. And just like the carbon footprint, which is the reliable measure that's being used to steer all of the Tansek stuff and the One Planet development, here we've got a valid and reliable assessment tool, which is known as FPTRQ. Why do they want to do this? They want to do this so they can use the results of these assessments to carefully select professional development strategies. That's what they want to do. So the last thing now is NEA schools and programs should allow staff the time and space to plan for family engagement activities and implement both group and individual activities with families. I'm sorry, I just lost words there for a minute. Where are they going to find the bloody time for this? And again, on the One Planet Development Policy, we saw a similar thing. We saw the need there to protect hedgerows, for example, that are being destroyed by everybody else, to protect archaeological sites and preferably enhance them, to bury any lanes, you know, to make sure any lanes or tracks that you want to put on your land don't destroy the view for anybody else. How often do we see the authorities actually taking that much detail? But what the point I'm making is that there's the same kind of insane requirement for detail on the One Planet development as there is on this family engagement tool or whatever it is. You know, I was told by, she was on the show, a lady called Jill used to be a teacher, a friend of mine, and she said by the time she left, which was quite a while back, teaching the children was well below number 10 on the list. Teaching the children was well below number 10 on the list on all the admin. And how are you going to have the time to do all of this? The thing is that that's not what matters, because this isn't what it's all about. Whether or not this can be done or not, it will be implemented unless people stand in its way, because it seems to me clearly what it's anticipated that it's going to do is enable the tidying up of a lot more children, and of course the pulling in of a lot more charge. Now, I just need to, if you'll excuse me, see if I can find this one. Here we go, yeah. Right, I lost the bit there which told me what FPTRQ is, because at this point I really tumbled into the rabbit hole. I'm not going to go there with you in any detail, though. The FPTRQ was defined for me by a website called the Office of Planning, Research and Evaluation. The Office of Planning, Research and Evaluation. And then in brackets it was called an Office of the Administration for Children and Families, full stop. And again, I had a quick look at this, but I'd really had enough by then. So it may interest you to know that FPTRQ stands for Family and Provider Teacher Relationship Quality Measures. No chance, that's what I say. Absolutely no chance. Measuring the quality of relationships. But like I say, that's not what they're actually after doing. What they're actually after doing is imposing a whole load of stuff that is most definitely, in my opinion, not in our interests. And all of this, you know, we've got people trying to involve themselves in our children's development and education. And according to the National Assessment of Adult Literacy, which, as I say, was completed most recently in 2003, and before that only in 1992, 14% of adult Americans demonstrated a below basic literacy level in 2003, and 29% exhibited a basic reading level. It would be my feeling that that probably hasn't improved since then. Difficult to say, really, because when you actually go and look for figures on these things, they don't seem to be being taken. When you look at the OECD figures, which I thought would be pretty comprehensive, actually they don't include any of the major countries at all, so you can forget it for Australia and Sweden and Canada and the UK. Any of those places. It's all third of the world countries that are listed there. And I didn't have time to look in any detail, but I'm well aware from reports that I've read and lost the links to that literacy rates, numeracy rates are not improving in our schools. Many, many, many people are coming out of the schools not able to read, write, or use numbers to any meaningful degree. I do not believe the solution to that is to start getting the people who set a system up that works so well actually coming into people's homes and starting interfering even further. Perhaps even more interesting in conclusion to this particular chunk of the show is that according to the Department of Justice, quote, the link between academic failure and delinquency, violence and crime is welded to reading failure. So it would appear that these people have concluded that that the reason why people fall into crime and end up in US jails and stuff is because they can't read. I'm not sure this is entirely entirely justifiable conclusion necessarily, but it it would give you some idea as to the basic underlying roots of the tree that we were describing earlier. Once again, I don't think that having social services and teachers and the Department of Education and all these other people involved in people's home lives is really going to help at all with academic failure. Not at all. It says the statistics back up the claim, though. 85% of all juveniles who interface with the juvenile court system, for God's sake, are functionally illiterate, and over 70% of the inmates in America's prisons cannot read above fourth grade level. Well, it's not going to make that situation any better coming up with a policy that is just going to enable people to basically make more mistakes, be more charged. There will be more so-called crimes that arise out of all of this, I'm sure. Legislative misdemeanors of one sort or another, whatever. But there you go. That, I think, is pretty awesome, really. I'm going to, at that point, play another tune. And this one's from Litmus, Feeding the Machine, which is what I suspect we're being encouraged to do. I'm back with you in 4 minutes or so. This is, of course, Dr. Rock's radio show on peoplesinternetradio.com.
My dad said to me as I left school, you need a job to pay your way. 'Cause things cost money and you're gonna need things. That's just the way things are today. So I left home and went to work at just 16. Started feeding the machine. Me and my brother moved into a flat. I paid my share of bills and rent. I got paid on a so-called Thursday. By Sunday night it was gone. That's how the weekends are all spent. And when the calendar's got you slaving for the 5 days in between, you're just feeding the machine. I got married. We had a couple of kids. I love them dearly to this day. But to put food on our table, put clothes on our backs, I needed lots more pay. I got me a work promotion, but the tax man stripped me clean. I'm mostly feeding his machine. To buy our own place, I had to get a big loan. That's called a mortgage, I hear you cry. Means death pledge, and that's because it feels like you're paying till you die. And most of its interest that goes to the bank's regime. They love us feeding their machine. And I would harder, I got me a raise. I kept aiming for the top. Pay went up, so did my debts, and the interest never stops. I met me a bankster, he said, son, you may be keen, but you're just feeding my machine. Began to realize what was going on, and how those banksters call the shots. The system, all based on debt, lending money they ain't got. So it don't matter if you work hard, if you're generous or mean. From what I've seen, you're just feeding the machine. I did miss some learning about how it all works and how they trick you right from birth. Your name is money to them when you're playing the surf, but your sweat and your talents what you really worth. But if you're reaping what you're sowing at the ignorance latrine, shit, you're just feeding the machine.
show where you've been. You're probably feeding the machine. But when your wisdom is showing you what a fool you've been, you'll stop feeding the machine. Let's stop feeding the machine. So let's stop feeding the machine.
Yay! Litmus there from projectfreeman.com and Feeding the Machine. I'm sure he won't mind if I leave that one in the podcast. So, just in case we've got any doubts about the nature of that document and about the interest that the World Management Team actually has in our wellness, our energy efficiency, or the levels of information that we're getting, either about stories in the world or what's going on in the banks, here's the first 10 minutes of a it's a Thrive Movement vid that came across, was posted sometime in the last couple of weeks, I think, and it's Foster Gamble who's doing the talking. I know some people have got a bit of suspicion about this particular setup, what with one of Procter and Gamble being involved and all that. In fact, several of the Gamble family, it seems, when you watch the vids. Personally, I really enjoyed Thrive, and I thought they hit some pretty key points. Certainly for this particular 9 minutes and 48 seconds, it's not really necessary to think about any of that. He's going to be talking about, fundamentally, as the title Murdered Holistic Doctors Update suggests, he's going to be talking primarily about murdered holistic doctors in recent months. But he's going to touch on several other groups of people who seem to be having a pretty hard time. And if we have any doubts about the nature of the team that put together the document we've been looking at in the first half of the show, hopefully this should cast, obviously there's bloody loads of things you could choose to play, but this is what I thought was particularly good because it covers a lot of ground. And again, it's something that I don't think a lot of people are aware of. It's something I've been keeping an eye on for several years now. Some of the lists of murdered people are a little unconvincing, though I have come across several reports a bit like this one that involve many people that Foster Gamble doesn't even mention, so chances are this is just scratching the surface. But anyway, here he comes. It's Foster Gamble from the Thrive Movement talking about murdered holistic doctors, and it's a bit of an update on reports they've been running for a while. Here he comes.
So, Aaron, why don't you go ahead and bring us up to speed? If you could give us an overview and just highlight a few of the representative cases to give us a sense of the personal stories of what's going on and some of the themes that are involved that are emerging in common to these individual tragedies.
Well, it really did start with Dr. Jeff Bradstreet, a medical doctor who was found dead June 19th of last year, so I don't even think that's 9 months ago. And I think we might have a picture of him here. And this photo is important, even though it's a little blurry, because that's him on the right. But that was his colleague, Paige Adams, and she was the only one in the – I've kind of included her in the series. She's the only one who's not a doctor of some sort, whether MD or DODC, but she was a board-certified nurse practitioner, young, and also found dead, again, just here local in our local community here in Florida, maybe 10 days ago or so. So then within 48 hours on Father's Day, Bruce Hedendahl here in Florida was found dead in his car. As you can see here, he was probably the oldest out of all the doctors, but he was in amazing shape. So he had been in an event that day. And I don't remember, I've spoken to loved ones and of his that are very close to him. I don't know if it was an actual competition or just like where they're doing like the disc throwing. It was a practice or competition, but he was in great health. He not only was a chiropractor, but had a PhD from Harvard in nutrition. And also I have patients writing all the time who say they go in with this stage or that stage cancer, and that he was able to put them into remission.
Yeah, that is not the look of somebody who doesn't want to live.
We also had Dr. Nick Gonzalez, who was well-loved, and another Dr. Abdul Kamir, found dead both on the same day, both on the East Coast. And Dr. Gonzalez was a best-selling author. He was, Dr. Mercola had interviewed him numerous times, and he was also helping patients like the two others with cancer. And we did not attend the funeral in New York and in New York City, but the church was packed. They say even Suzanne Summers said this in a video that she did with people that had like stage 4 pancreatic cancer and were going to die. And now 20 years later, they're like, here I am, thanks to Dr. Gonzalez. That in his very last interview, which is now on YouTube, Joe and I didn't do it, but someone else did. He did say that he had heard that they wanted him dead. And then these are more pictures of doctors found dead, many under mysterious circumstances. We have the one in the corner who allegedly fell off a balcony at his house, was a vegan cardiologist, outspoken in holistic practices as well. And so with a total, it would be 33 others, some in mysterious car accidents who even the authorities say don't add up. These are all holistic doc. I think every one of those doctors there would be holistic doctors. And this was all within, I think every one of them would have been in the last year.
Best I could tell, many of them were working with the autism vaccine connection, some with cannabis oil, some with the GICMAF, this enzyme that seems to really boost the immune system against cancer. So it seems to me, if you had to boil it down, they were doing effective jobs at both helping patients and getting the word out on alternatives that might be very effective and well might undermine the sickness business in one way or another, which is, most people know, it. Multi-trillion-dollar business.
Oh, yeah, yes. Because of the platforms many of them had, big platforms, not only were they writing about it, talking about it, Dr. Bradstreet and others did TV shows on just focusing out on vaccines.
Okay, well, thank you for that update, and thank you for bringing this story to light. What I'd like to do is take just a few minutes to share a little bit of an overview of my research. I've been researching assassinations, unfortunately, for over a decade, and so it gives me the opportunity to look at the themes that are in common to a bunch of them. So let me just say how some of my research relates to what it is that you're sharing. First of all, you know, George Bernard Shaw is known for saying, amongst many other things, assassination is the extreme form of censorship. So in going from this kind of micro scenario to the macro and looking at other sectors, there were in the early 2000s, in the first 3 or 4 years of after the millennium, there were over 30 microbiologists who were found dead under suspicious circumstances. So these are many people who were working on different biowarfare things, on anthrax and so forth, and fundamentally they were people who were in the know on what the shadow government, what the agencies, what the secret societies were doing, ironically enough, developing ways of killing other people who might get in the way of their agenda. There have been a lot of rumors about the suspicious things that have happened surrounding the Clintons for the last 20 to 30 years, you know, from the MENA, Arkansas CIA drug smuggling to the whole Whitewater scandal and then on into Bill's administration and a lot of Hillary's activities with Benghazi and so forth. And I had originally heard 33. I went back to check, and now it's closer. It's between 60 and 70 suspicious deaths surrounding them, the only one of which most people know is Vince Foster, who's pictured on the left there. But let me just mention some other areas so that you can see the theme here. There have been, as many of you may know, over the last year or two, many suspicious deaths of bankers. There have been over 70 of them. Many of them worked in risk, the risk management level of these big banks. and they had a lot of inside information on the rigging of the gold market, the Forex market, of the LIBOR interest rate market, and so forth. So again, when the top people don't want investigations to be able to follow the money and the power chain all the way up to them, their strategy is often to take out the middleman. Aaron did an article recently on journalists who've been killed. There were over 2,000 cited in that article. Many people have probably heard of the carjacking of, or car hacking really, of Michael Hastings, McChrystal, and he had been harassed by FBI agents, just like Jeff Bradstreet was, literally the day before that, so he supposedly crashed his car, but you know, anybody who's in the know on these things know that they can take over and hack those cars, and there was evidence of explosives in the car. And Andrew Breitbart, who was coming out with a story on Obama just before the election, was killed. Gary Webb, the famous journalist from the San Jose Mercury, was exposing the CIA drug smuggling and then was found shot twice in the head. I mean, this one, it would make you laugh if it weren't so tragic. You know, who has the wherewithal to shoot themselves the second time in the head? Then in the area of energy inventors, which cuts close to home for us, I've been involved in this field for 15 years, and as we reported in Thrive, the movie, Gene Malov was suspiciously beaten to death the day before he was going on Coast to Coast with David Wilcock to talk about new breakthroughs in cold fusion. Stanley Meyer was disappeared after he went public with his automobile engine that ran on water. Several acquaintances of ours, Adam Trombley and his partner Farnsworth and John Bedini and Paul Pantone, Paul Pantone died recently, but he was literally kidnapped, institutionalized, and then basically drugged to almost to death because he was also coming out with a water engine. So it goes on into voter fraud, election rigging. There have been at least seven clear assassinations having to do with the Choice Point, Diebold, and TrueVolt and TrueVote companies. There are a rash of assassinations around the whistleblowers on the international pedophilia rings at the high level of the judiciary, of the police, and of top-level government people. And unfortunately, I could go on and on with this, but my point is to make the pattern clear that there are very powerful would-be controllers who don't want the truth coming out.
I think it's also important to recognize that.
Foster Gamble there talking about primarily murdered holistic doctors. And yes, Joan, too many good people dying to help raise awareness of what is going on, which is exactly what that 10 minutes of pod is doing in this show, because let's just kick off with the doctors there. The administration that over recent years has apparently presided over an increase in, let's just say, autism rates, shall we, from 1 in 1,000 in America to 1 in 50. Is the one that's inviting itself into your dwelling to help look after your children's wellness. Now, as it happens, one of the doctors, I think Bradstreet his name was, because I looked into some of the ones that they named there, and as I say, I've looked into many others in the past, was actually working specifically in the autism field. And he found that his treatment, which I think was one of the Nagalese-based, the GC MAF ones, apparently completely cleared the autism in some 15% of the people that he treated and had a beneficial effect in 65% overall. So one of the ways of helping us look after our offspring's wellness is to stop killing the doctors that are looking after them effectively. Stop doing that. You know, there's another doctor in there who is quoted as having had several people at fourth stage pancreatic cancer who had been told by the health system that they were going to die, and 20 years later they were still in remission. The best thing you can do to improve the wellness of us and the wellness of our dependents and friends and families is to stop killing the people who are coming up with the solutions. But it wasn't just the holistic doctors that interested me about that one. The reason why I chose it is because it actually covers a whole load of other stuff, which maybe the workaday members of the population find it a little bit difficult to take on board. But he wasn't just covering deaths. He was covering deaths of specific people. What about that bit about the Clintons, eh? and Hillary. 60 to 70 deaths apparently lying in their trail now, and again, plenty of stuff to go and look at there. Some of you will remember that we covered a little bit the siege at the Oregon Ranch as part of a media and propaganda show. Well, it would appear, and obviously I'm making no allegations here, but as far as I can gather, it would seem at least possible that the Clintons are selling uranium on the land that's being seized from Americans, who are being hunted more or less by the FBI. They're selling uranium from those lands, apparently, to fund Hillary's election campaign. Surely that can't be possible, can it? Can't be right. 70 bankers died, and what were those bankers interested in? They were interested in all the market rigging that went on, because it wasn't just LIBOR. Practically every single interest rate that's out there, and the interest, of course, is one of the biggest criminal acts that's being perpetrated upon us. But these guys are making even more money out of it by manipulating the interest rates. Apparently, the guys who really knew about it, some 70 of them, are now no longer with us. And one of the good ways of preventing people from following where the money goes is apparently to kill the middlemen. 2,500 dead investigative journalists was the figure quoted by the paper there. I've seen figures as high as 3,000. And they, of course, could be involved in all sorts of stuff. He listed things to do with the Obama campaign, things to do with CIA drug smuggling, which has been well acknowledged for an awfully, awfully long time now, certainly since Nicaragua. But still, there's a whole load of people out there who don't believe it's going on, so I don't suppose they'd believe for a moment that the CIA are running children either, would they? Probably not. But that doesn't make it any less true that it's happening. He then went into a load of alternative energy people. These are really important, really important. The, your water-powered engine and cold fusion and that kind of stuff. One of the reasons why we're under the kind of stress that's leading to all the anxiety and depression and all that sort of stuff is because we're having our arses charged off for energy which is ours anyway, and for energy which we do not need to be producing by burning fossil fuels, and worse still, by burning trees. We just don't need to be doing that anymore. So once again, if you want to reduce the stress on us and the stress on our children and our relationships, then stop killing people who can provide energy that does not involve us being enslaved to corporations and paying yet more of our hard-earned gaming tokens to people who aren't doing a bloody thing to actually earn it. I mean, as it happens, when I was looking into assassinations and stuff, I found a few bundles of archaeologists that were quite interestingly linked. And the latest one I spotted was, I think, something like 72 NASA scientists. These numbers, you know, they keep coming up with 33 and 72. Anyone would think they were just picking kind of like, you know, mystical numbers out of the air. Perhaps they genuinely are the right numbers. Given that a lot of this is covert CIA wet work styly stuff, I guess it'd be very difficult for us to know. Quite a lot of NASA scientists, quite a lot of other astronomers over the last 30 years as well have copped for it in suspicious circumstances. So the no-fit state, which would have us believe that it's interested in the mental health and general wellness of we and our offspring, clearly has a few other programs running. And if I was going to be entering into a contract with somebody, I would not want it to be with somebody who's got anything to do with that kind of thing. But of course, as Motorhead well know, killing people is a well good way of stopping the story. Motorhead and Dead Men Tell No Tales, one of the basic techniques of the world management team, we gather. Slim's put a couple of interesting links into the chat box that are apropos. The first one is 29 holistic doctors, practitioners found poisoned, some nearly dead. Another attack on alternative medicine, ? A mass poisoning, nearly 30 holistic doctors and naturopaths, and still no clear understanding of how the tragedy unfolded. As reported by Health Nut News, authorities in Germany are still trying to determine how 29 people were simultaneously drugged with toxic doses of amphetamines. Some later nearly died as rescue crews hurried to save their lives, which means it was either very good speed or very bad speed. According to a report from US News, the incident took place at a homeopathic conference. Oh my God. On Saturday in Germany at 2:25 p.m. an emergency call for help was placed at the convention center, and within 50 minutes, 150 first responders arrived at the horrifying scene. Wow. homeopathic conference, eh? And Health Nut News, that's the lady. Hang on a moment, let me see if I can find her name. And there's a somewhat crazy page full of stuff I've got here. Erin Elizabeth, healthnutnews.com, healthnutsnews.com. Again, very interesting place. I've been all over the place looking at this particular show, but thanks for that one, Slim. And then there's another one called Is Big Pharma Killing Doctors? This comes from Skeptoid.com. Rumours started going around in June 2015. Holistic doctors, natural healers who relied on the power of herbs and energy to cure the diseases that science couldn't, were starting to die mysteriously. They were murdered in their homes, suicide, or just dropping dead out of nowhere. Others were vanishing without a trace. And the alternative medicine community believed Big Pharma was behind it, knocking off the resistors to their plan to force drugs and vaccinations on all of us. Clearly this is the Skeptoid News, so I would imagine there's going to be more in there. Do go and give it a look. But one way or the other, should we not be concerned? You know, really, should we first not be aware, and secondly, should we not be concerned? I think that was very good work on the part of Mr. Proctor there. Which brings us on now to, as I said, Simon Spaniard has started stirring in his burrow, which is really great. He's, I wonder if I've got his website. Oh, I got his website up. Hold on a moment. Yes, here we go. Simon's asked me, because I told him I was going to be using a couple of recent vids he's put up, and he asked me to bring to your attention his attempt to get into the mainstream. And he's formed a website called youandyourcash.com. And as you know, some of you will know, Simon Spaniard spent 17 years selling mortgages and doing retail banking and debt collecting and stuff like that. So when he talks about cash and contracts and mortgages, he really does know. So youandyourcash.com, I literally only found out about it as I was coming on the air, so I haven't had time to look at it. Here's the link, youandyourcash.com. Not yet. Hang on a moment, we'll have another go at that. He set it up with a man called Mark Moxon. Mark is a multiple best-selling author on food, health and business. He's had decades of experience in natural health and is an outspoken advocate of natural nutrition and drug-free living. He's also the founder and executive editor of Low Carb Mag. And Simon Spaniard, Simon began his working life with Messrs. Coutts & Co., bankers to the Queen, during a career which has thus far spanned 29 years. Simon has served time as a bank manager, financial observed time, as a bank manager, financial advisor and general manager of a major UK broking firm, which later became London Scottish Broking. So there we go, youandyourcash.com. I'm sure it will be worth a look at, because everything I've heard Simon say has been worth listening to. Well, for some reason, I'll have to do that when I'm playing the next bit. But anyway, you can find youandyourcash.com, all one word, can't you, folks? Also on the idea of radical, homeopaths are a radical bunch. You know, I've been to a couple of homeopath conferences and they don't necessarily get on very well because they're all kind of like living in the woods in gingerbread cottages or whatever, and they're kind of all, radical in their own way. So it's very interesting when you get a bunch of them together. And we will be having a guest soon coming up, spoken with a lady called Stella, who describes herself as a radical homeopath for the last 20 years, and she's also very much into land access laws, the common law, and various other things. So we'll be having her on soon, and perhaps we'll get a bit of a perspective on some of this stuff from her. But now I want to play something that Simon put up just a couple of days ago. It's called Our Protection from Tyranny, The Separation of Power. It's what it's called. And once again, as Simon has done many times in the past, he's come up with something that I think is it's probably quite useful to know, because it kind of helps sharpen your attitude a little bit, you know, a bit like that law professor we had on a couple of weeks ago, saying that there was absolutely no argument in law, reason or argument for why any of this nonsense applies to us, which is exactly why we should be listening carefully to Robert Sproul and Vin and Cotty and Ray and stuff, and doing best to gird our loins. But like I say, here's Simon Spaniard, Our Protection from Tyranny, such as it is, as we shall hear.
Hello everyone, Spaniard here.
Oh, and before I forget, Simon always includes what are really apposite tunes with his videos. And this one's got How's That by Sherbet on it. And it actually is completely applicable to the video that he's put on. So I'm going to play How's That by Sherbet. I'm pretty bloody sure you're not going to hear it again on Dr. Rock's radio show, but tonight you're going to hear it again anyway.
Now, I travelled into London the other day for a meeting, and I decided on my way up there on the train to read a book. And the book I decided to read was The Making and Remaking of the British Constitution. Okay, some enjoyable reading there. And it's by the Right Honourable Lord Nolan and Sir Stephen Sedley. Sir Stephen Sedley. Getting my tongue twisted there. Anyhow, one of the cornerstones of our society is that we the people are protected by the separation of power. Okay, and this is what the Right Honourable Lord Nolan has to say on the matter. In these three Radcliffe lectures, I shall speak about the three major arms of the British Constitution: the legislature, the executive, and the judiciary. Law lords, I might add, are appointed by the Queen on recommendation of the Prime Minister. So are judges of the Court of Appeal. In both cases, the Prime Minister acts with the help of advice from the Lord Chancellor, but it is the Prime Minister who selects the appointees. The Lord Chancellor is responsible for recommending or making appointments to the High Court and the courts below. It is, of course, the Lord Chancellor who not only embodies the law, but combines in his office each of the three elements of the Constitution. Thus, the separation of powers in this country has never been as absolute as in the United States of America. Ministers, the executive, serve in the legislature, as do senior judges. Judges undertake tasks for the executive, and on occasion, for the legislature. The dominance of the executive has undoubtedly rested on the party system, something which until recently was not formally recognised anywhere in our constitutional arrangements. Of the 651 members of Parliament, over 100 are on the payroll vote, that is, either government ministers or unpaid parliamentary private secretaries, at any time, while nearly 100 more are opposition front benchers or members of their teams. So one-third of members are either in executive office or on the career ladder towards it. Now, what is basically said there, if I just take you back, he states here, thus the separation of powers in this country has never been as absolute. Right. He then goes on to say, as in America, well, hold on, there either is a separation of power or there isn't a separation of power. It can't be both at the same time. And what this guy is basically saying is that there is no separation of power. So one of the cornerstones, if not the foundation, of this society and the way in which people are governed is a lie. It can't be true and not true at the same time. It's either true or it isn't true, especially when it comes down to something being separate. So, for example, is my right hand separate from my left hand? Well, they are connected via this body. So they're not actually independent of each other, although I can do different things with them at different times. Well, assuming that I can do more than one thing at once, right? Depending on what it is, yeah? But the point I'm making is this. It's not separate. Anyhow, if you are happy as a standard accepting that, well, there's supposed to be a separation of power, but there isn't really, so what we'll do is we'll just pretend that there is. Okay, that's fine. My questions would just be, well, so what else do we have to pretend is true that isn't true? And if we're just pretending, right, does that mean that it has no real effect if it all goes wrong? Because that's not true, is it? Because these things do have real effect on people. But, you know, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. It's founded on a lie. Now, if you're happy to just go along with lies and just pretense, well, then just ignore this video or forget you ever watched it. Alternatively, if you're not prepared to just ignore what is effectively a blatant lie, well, then what are you going to do about it? You're just going to stick your head in the sand and pretend it doesn't exist, that the contradiction doesn't exist when it clearly does? This is the Right Honourable Lord Nolan telling you. Anyhow, until next time, big love.
The truth is that we need to open up our eyes so that we start to see all of the lies that we were told and we believed. Because the time has come to face reality and work together for the sake of liberty, so that our future generation can be free. We need to wake up and see that the truth is not what it appears to be. Truth is, the real reason for war is motivated by money and corporate interest. Rwanda didn't have oil, that's why the world turned a blind eye during its genocide. Truth is, corporations can donate an unlimited amount of money to a candidate. Democrats and Republicans are bought and paid, so government does whatever corporations say. Truth is, the president doesn't run the country. The people in charge are those who control the money, so the Federal Reserve's really more powerful than the U.S. government, and they're running the show. The truth is that Goldman Sachs sold subprime mortgages they knew were bad. They also profited by betting they'd all fail, so they'd win either way, and no one went to jail. Truth is, the financial crisis ain't solved. It was a big Ponzi scheme, an inside job, where taxpayers bailed out the banks who caused it in the first place, and now they're still in charge. Truth is, money is created from debt. If all debt was repaid, there'd be no money left. But loans that are made have interest attached that doesn't exist, so we can't pay it back. Truth is, our banking system's a trap that leads to bankruptcy and collapse. It's why the states are $50 trillion in the hole, and this crisis is spreading all around the globe. Truth is, a crash is inevitable, cause our growing debt must be matched in the real world through the use of resources, so infinite growth on a finite planet is impossible. The truth is that we need to open up our eyes so that we start to see all of the lies that we were told and we believed. Because the time has come to face reality and work together for the sake of liberty, so that our future generation can be free. We need to wake up and see that the truth is not what it appears to be. Truth is, the CIA has a history of smuggling drugs into the states. Their profits are then laundered through banks in order to help them secretly operate. Cause the truth is, they've been involved in things that would make people appalled, like mind control experiments on soldiers to alter their behavior through drugs and hypnosis. Truth is, Nazis were the first to try putting fluoride into the nation's water supply to dumb people down and control what they think, and now it's in almost all the water that we drink. Truth is, there's a chemical company called Monsanto controlling the food we eat by transforming everything genetically and then forcing everyone to only use their seeds. Truth is that the medical industry is big business with millions of employees. The last thing it wants is a cure for cancer, cause they'd lose trillions if there was ever an answer. Truth is, cures for cancer exist. Just look up Dr. Brzezinski in Texas, who's been curing people with tumors for years. The FDA and the government don't want you to hear. Truth is, you can't trust the TV news. It's pre-filtered to distract and confuse. All the outlets are owned by only 5 companies, so it's impossible to ever get news objectively, cause the truth is, people need to wake up and expose how our whole system is corrupt. And if you think I'm wrong, go ahead, try to stump me. Let's see you write a song as smart as this to debunk me. The truth is that we need to open up our eyes so that we start to see all of the lies that we were told and we believed. Because the time has come to face reality and work together for the sake of liberty, so that our future generation can be free. We need to wake up and see that the truth is not what it appears to be. The truth is.
That was Kyle Samson and Truth Is. And just in case, the thing about the murdered holistic doctors and research scientists and biological weapons experts and bankers and all the information that seems to be latent in that policy document we were looking at earlier, Kyle really covers a whole load of other stuff there. Pick any line in that song and go look it up. That's what I say. Truth is, not what it appears to be. And whilst Simon was playing his Sherbet and How's That, and we have actually played several tunes that I've discovered on the end of Simon's videos and smuggled them into the playlist. Like I say, that one probably won't be making a return, but whilst it was playing, he had a load of Star Wars type words disappearing like they do on these modern vids, and they said, so there we have it. The separation of power ensures that the people of Blighty could never be subject to the kind of tyrannical dictatorships witnessed elsewhere on this sorry planet. Unfortunately, or fortunately, there is no separation of power. So if you ever see or witness police dressing like stormtroopers, public servants doing what they want, politicians abusing their expenses or operating without threat of prosecution, new laws rushed through Parliament, spin doctors hiding the truth, dodgy deals being done for corporate friends, voters being asked to vote again, politicians claiming the people are not capable of deciding their own futures, CCTV everywhere, breaches of privacy, secret police, failure being rewarded, and secret courts. Don't worry, it means Blighty is the new Russia. Well, that's not the only thing, of course. If we have no constitutional protection, and I'm trying to get somebody on to come and talk to me about English constitutional law, because it does strike me as being extremely murky. But by and large, I think Simon's done quite a good thing there, because he said, here you go, here's one of your basic fundamental apparent protections. And fundamentally, it's not there. You are on your own. And you are on your own. There's no way, it seems, for lots of different reasons, which again could be the subject of a show all on their own, on its own. It's unlikely that a group template response is going to be found to this. Ultimately, we need to understand, comprehend, we need to comprehend what is being done to us, and we need to learn what to do to bring about different solutions, as it were. And this, of course, luckily, is the speciality of People's Internet Radio, in as far as we have one. These are our special solutions. Now, a lot of you will have heard Robert Sproul talking on Scotland Is Free on Pat's show on Monday nights, now running, I think, between 9 and 11 o'clock before the Cotty Hour, between 11 and midnight. Both of them great shows. You'll have heard Robert Sproul on Pat's show. Personally, I've listened many times to all of his outings there. Every single time there's useful stuff, but now he's really getting on to the videos. Me and Synchro have been actually watching Robert Sproul, breakfast time every morning for quite a long time now, because there's all these new calls going up. I could have chosen several of them. There's a couple of real beautiful calls with a couple of Welsh characters in the DVLA, and 10 out of 10 to them for staying calm, really. But the one I've chosen to go for this particular purpose, because all of this awful stuff, it is up to us as individuals to sort it out. The reason why we're in such a state, as well as I can see, is because we have failed to sort it out to date. I'm seriously hoping that this radio show, this podcast, as it will be, is going to bring home just the bloody where we stand. I guess it's what we've been trying to do here for years and years and years, and you keep trying to put together a different cluster of stuff. But the idea is not to make everybody just dig themselves a hole and shut the door behind them, but to stand up, really, and begin to think about it. These podcasts between them have covered a whole load of really quite seriously criminal activity. Some of it actually enacted in order to cover a whole load of other criminal activity. How much more of it do we have to see before we do something about it? And 10 out of 10 to Rob. I'm really up for it. Keep going, man. And this is his encounter with, on the phone, with a financial ombudsman. Well, at least that's what she calls herself. I mean, when you listen to we might wonder whether it is just a title. Rob Sproul, ladies and gentlemen. War on the Legal System, Part 13.
Rob here. It's another wee video. It's about the banks. People get into your account taking your money. The thing you need to remember, people, the bank has no life, so a bank can't order your money to be sent somewhere else. It has to be the man or woman acting in the role of bank manager or staff The bank cannot do it, right? You can't really answer phones or speak to people. This is the bit you need to get the gist of. The same as every other corporation. It's the same thing, the same fraud, the same nonsense, the deception, right? And the thing of the matter is, this video is about people getting into your account and the verification of your debt. I've also going to put a call up, the financial ombudsman. The information on the financial ombudsman call is very important that you pay attention and listen to this, people. What I'm trying to do here, every video that I'm putting up with calls, is for the information, the proper information, and the way things should be dealt with, and how to challenge authority of fictitious entities with no life, right? Nobody's going to come forward and make a claim for any money. No man or woman can come forward unless you've got a contract with these people and you're signing a wet signature contract and there's a wet signature bill. Then there's a chance. Just remember, people, most of the things you do is on the phone. So when you talk to somebody on the phone and you make an agreement, it's not a contract, although they're trying to put across as a contract. They don't know who they're talking to on the phone when you give you details. So how do they know that you're that man or woman that's speaking? That's the other thing you need to take into account, people, right? It's based on presumption and assumption, right? They're taking you at your word. You could be using somebody else's details on that phone to set up an account, right? So how can you have a contract? Because they don't know who's on the phone. It's as simple as that, people. That is how really simple it is. Anyway, people, I contacted on Wisman about this, about people getting into people's debts, like debt collectors like Walker & Love, Scott & Co, Buchanan & Co. And I told them that they're issuing a bit of paper at the bank, and the bank's releasing money without verifying the debt, which is happening, people. If I come up to you with a bit of paper and say, I've got a bit of paper from my sister, she says you owe £200, does that mean to say that people owe a debt? Somehow I don't think so. The verification of the debt, people, is a wet signature contract, a bill signed by a man or a woman. And if it's a third-party interloper like a debt collector, they need a delegation of authority signed by a man and a woman. And this is fact, people. This is how it is, right? And this is what you have to start educating yourself and start knowing how to take these people on, right? Like if a debt collector gets in contact, when they tell you that they represent a council, right? How can they represent a council? The council's in life. So it's a false claim for status, people. They're telling you lies because there is no man or woman called council. And one of the latest videos I put up proves that. You heard the call, you heard the information, and it's the same way of the corporate entity. There is no life, there is no man or woman, right? And nobody's going to come forward and make a claim. But I've done it on the call numerous times asking, are you making a claim? Nobody's going to do it, people, because they cannot do it, because they're open to full liability, right, in private capacity, right? I spoke to the woman on the call, the financial ombudsman, and I was telling her what was happening. These people don't know about this, people. They say that if the consumers, they call you consumers, that's a legal term, people. You're a man or a woman, you're not a consumer, right? This is the things you need to learn. I'm going to do a video about legalese and teach you about certain words that they're using against you, you don't understand it, you think you might understand, okay? But she said that they've no knowledge of this, right? And I brought it to their attention. She says that if the consumer is no happy, they can make a complaint. Never make a complaint, people. Make a claim. Always make a claim and claim the status as a man or woman. And anything that's trying to be took off of you, the man or woman, it's your property. Don't call it vehicle or anything else. If it's a car or whatever, property, everything that you own, everything you pay for is your property, exclusive to you, exclusive to others in a legal society, right? Because they've no jurisdiction over your property when you claim it property. But if you use certain legal terms that they understand that you don't, you give them jurisdiction over your property, and that's how they can steal it. Anyway, people, I went through the call with the ombudsman and I explained certain things. But if you listen to the call, you hear it for yourself, and the information spot on 100%, right? There's a few times that she tried to correct me when I said certain things, but I was quick to correct her, right? And as you hear the call, you understand what I'm saying. Well, what I'm saying is, people, to verify a debt, there needs to be a contract, a bill, and again, a delegation authority for a third party, right? The bank has a duty, an obligation, legally, to verify the debt. The debt has to be verified before anybody can take money out of your bank. The bank don't verify the debt, they're acting unlawful, no illegal, unlawful. Right, they've got to verify the debt. What you can do, you can challenge the bank manager, the banks, and tell them that you want verification of the debt. You want an appointment again to see whoever's in charge to show verification that you're the debt, the contract, wet signature and bill, and the delegation authority if it's a third party. If that doesn't happen, people, they can't take your money to your bank. Plus the fact they need your consent, because in that account, right, it might be the bank's name or the building society's name that's on that account. But within that account, people, it's your property. You own that property. And you claim ownership of that property. It's yours. Not anybody else's. You own it. It's yours. You can also let the bank know that if anything is passed through the bank without your consent, and it's not been verified, you're going to have the man or woman acting in the role of manager, or the man or woman acting in the role as a clerk, that you're going to have them in the private capacity under full liability, because they're acting unlawful. And always remember, people, the difference between legal and lawful. When you use the terms legal, you're a legal person, you have duties and obligations. Lawful, you have rights, you're a man and a woman, right? Tell them that you're also going to charge them a fee for the loss and just for compensation, right? That's the thing, right? Anyway, people, I'm going to put up a call just now, right? Listen to the information, pay serious attention, the same as every other call that I put up. It's the same principle. Every legal entity has no life, people. I'm guaranteeing it, and I'm verifying it just now. No man or woman in any company name, corporate name, can come forward and make a claim. And I'll give you a prime example. There's a case coming up for the Indie Camp up in Embra. And in the papers, to what I've my understanding is, they're saying there's a corporate body making a claim. Well, a corporate body is an entity, people. There's no man or woman called corporate body, and I'm verifying that right now. That's a thing to pull against the people, to defraud them of their property, people. Anyway, I'm going to put this call up. Listen to information, people. Pay serious attention to every word that's said in this call. You'll see what I'm doing, you'll see where I'm coming from, and you'll see how she's trying to turn things back on me, but I'll turn it straight back on her. I'll be back at the end of the call to give you a few more pointers. Please, people, this information is important to not just the people that's watching videos. It's important that everybody and the message gets passed out there so everybody can get educated, because the more people we're waking up, the more chance we have of nutting this tyranny with these parasites and stopping us. And when people realise they're men and women, your life will change, because my life has changed, because any time a legal entity comes to me, I get rid of them rapid time. They don't come back for more. Let me tell you that. And this is how I can put this information up, people. Because everything I'm telling you here, I'm verifying as an honourable man. I've tried it and I've tested it, and I know what works, I know what doesn't work, and everything I'm doing is working. Anyway, people, now the video's going
to... We'll be able to help you. My name's Caroline Wayman, and I'm the Chief Ombudsman. In a moment, I'm going to ask you to choose one of five options so that we can get you to the right place. But first, I need to tell you that we do record phone calls to make sure we're giving the right information. So here are the five options. If your call is about payment protection insurance, or PPI, please press 1. If your call is about a bank or building society, a mortgage, personal or payday loan, credit card, or hire purchase, please press 2. If your call is about insurance, for example, home, motor, or travel insurance, please press 3. If your call is about an investment, an endowment, life insurance, or a pension, please press 4. And if you're just not sure, or if your call is about something else, please press 5 and someone will be right with you. Good morning, it's Sharon, how can I help?
How are you doing? I've got two plumber, an advocate, I help people in the community. There's quite a few concerns relating to banks. Right. This is a general inquiry. I'll tell you what it is. There seems to be a kind of flogging on the corporations such as debt collectors. And what's actually happening is these people are going into people's accounts with forged instruments and uplifting money, because they're saying that people are debt, but they cannot verify the debt with a contract or wet signature bill or a delegation of authority. They send a letter to the bank and they get into people's banks, and the bank just allow the money to go, which is unlawful, because the account in the bank may be the bank's account, but the money in the bank account is the man or woman's property. Mm. And if they don't consent, that should not be allowed to be removed unless the bank can verify that this man or woman owes a debt before they transfer any funds to any debt collector or anybody else, agency or otherwise.
Yeah.
This is wrong, and I want to know why this is allowed to happen and why nothing's been done with the financial ombudsman to protect people's rights, because people have rights, no obligations or duties, rights.
Okay, well, we look into individual complaints, so if a consumer can bring a complaint to us and we can investigate that, but I can't answer it on a grand scale because I'm not aware of, it's not something I'm aware of.
It's because it's hidden by the banks. The thing in the matter is, it's like, I'll give you an example, right? I'll ask you a question, right, and then you'll see what I'm trying to get at, right? The financial ombudsman, is there a man or woman called that name?
No.
Is it a corporation?
An organisation.
Okay, so that organisation would not be able to write letters, answer phones, or speak to people. Would that be correct?
Would not be able to what, sorry?
Write letters, answer phones, or speak to people.
Yeah, we do. I'm speaking to you now.
No, I'm talking about the organisation. You say the organisation is a corporation. An organisation is a fictitious entity. It has no life, so it cannot do anything that you state.
Right.
Only the woman or man that I'm speaking to just now can do that. Am I correct?
Right. Yeah.
Well, what's actually happening is, like, for instance, let's say people owe council tax, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I've just exposed the council as a fraud, right? I've got prima facie evidence to the effect. What people, what corporations are doing against men and women to get access and steal out their accounts is use fictitious names, such as council, debt collectors' names like Stirling and Park, Walker and Love, Scott and Co. And what they're doing is, this is how they're extracting money from people's accounts on forged instruments. These people, I help people on a grand scale all over the country in Scotland with debt, and I ask for a delegation of authority for a third party. Debt collectors are third party interlopers. They do not have first hand knowledge and they cannot verify a debt, but yet they can go, be permitted to get into a bank account and steal somebody's money without the man or woman's consent in that account, and a bank to put that out. The bank are culpable because they're acting unlawful, because the bank's not asking for verification of the debt. They just assume by a document that's sent to them. Pardon?
That's not something the bank should be doing, as far as I'm aware, but it's not something I'm aware of that is happening.
That is happening, let me tell you, because I've got people contacting me on a daily basis asking for assistance, because I'm a common law advocate. I'm not a legal person. I'm not, nothing to do with a legal society. Pardon?
They can bring their complaints to the Ombudsman.
See, this is another thing, right? I'm a common law advocate. I do not deal with complaints. I deal with verified claims, because what I do is I go after people in a private capacity and hold them personally liable. This has also happened to me in the past with the Clydesdale Bank, and I sent them a notice, a common law notice, invoke common law right, and it was no longer in stock, let me tell you, because although the bank account is in the Clydesdale Bank's name, what's in that account is my property, and no man or woman, it doesn't matter who it is, has a right to take my property without my consent, because legislation is governed by the consent of the governed, can only be given the force of law by consent. It's a rule, it is not a law. No legislation is a rule. It's part of a legal society, and these men and women do not understand legal terms, legal meanings, or legal customs of the legal society. So they're being conned with a language called legalese, and I think you know what I'm actually talking about, because you're a legal person, you work for a legal society, so you'll know what I'm talking about when it comes to corporations.
Legal society, I work for the Financial Ombudsman.
Well, that's part of the legal society. It's a corporate body. It's a corporation.
So the consumers, if they're unhappy with what their banks have done, they can bring a complaint to us to investigate?
Complaints get swept under the carpet. I've already had dealings with your department myself, and that's what exactly happened to IAMAN. So that's why people come to people like me that's fighting against the system, the corrupt system.
What is it you're looking for me to do today?
I want to know answers why this has been allowed to happen.
Well, it's not a question I can answer for you. It's not something I'm aware of that's happening. So,
well, maybe you'll be able to answer this, right?
Bring their complaints to us.
Has a bank the right to give a man or woman's money away without verifying a debt? You'll be able to answer that, surely.
Well, they shouldn't, no.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. The bank, because somebody, right, like...
If the consumers are unhappy, they can bring their complaints to us to investigate.
Well, if the problem you're going to have is if I deal with us and I tell all these people, you're going to have, it's no complaints they'll be doing. I'll be advising them as a common law advocate to put to a verified claim, because they'll be looking to take these managers and bank staff on their private capacity under full liability, because they're acting unlawful, not illegal, unlawful.
We don't do it in a private capacity. We do it against the business. So we would look.
You can't sue a business. You can only sue a man or a woman. I'm common law. I'm a common law. I just act lawful, not legal.
We're not in the process of suing people that work for banks. We would look at a complaint against the bank or the organisation.
A bank has no rights there. A bank has no rights. You can't sue a bank. A bank's not a corporate
name. We don't
name.
Sue people, that's what I just said. We're not a legal entity, we don't sue people. We review the complaints, and if we believe that the bank should issue some compensation or rectify what they've done, then we can ask them to do that.
Well, tell me this, right, because you've got me quite confused, right, because what is a bank? Can you define a bank?
It's an organisation that looks after people's money.
No, the people in the bank look after people's money. Only a man or a woman can look after people's money. An organisation has no life there. It's an entity. It's a fictitious entity. It's a fictitious entity.
I'm not quite sure what it is you're wanting me to do. As I've advised, if the consumers are unhappy with the actions of their banks, they can bring individual complaints to us.
Right. And what action will you take?
We'll investigate that complaint.
So what? Could you verify something here yourself, man to woman? You're saying that the bank, without verifying a debt, should not be allowing money to go out of the bank. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And that's 100%. You're personally saying that yourself, yes?
I believe they should rectify any, verify any amount that they're debiting, and get the customer's authority for that. Yeah.
Because to be honest with you, there's a grand scale here. This is not just in Scotland. This is all over England, everywhere. And what's actually happening is these people.
Pardon? Consumers can bring the... You've said that, and I have advised that if the consumers are unhappy, they can bring their complaints to us to investigate.
Right, but if you say... Well, let me ask you another question before I finish. I'm not holding you much longer. If a man or woman that owns that account, right? No, they don't own the bank account, but they own the property in it. If they do not consent, who is a bank or man or woman acting in the, or representing the bank to give their property away without their consent? Because that's theft. That's a crime in law. No man or woman has the right to give anybody's property away without their consent. That's like me coming to your house and taking your car without your consent. That is theft. That's the point I'm getting at. They're stealing people's money. Unlawfully.
I understand your point. I understand your point completely. And it, as I said, if the consumers are unhappy, they can bring their complaints to us on an individual basis.
Okay. Well, what I'll do is, you're going to, if I'm going to do what I'm going to do, you're going to have a hell of a lot of paperwork, let me tell you, because you're talking about thousands upon thousands of people here. You're not talking a couple of dozen people here. You're talking a mega amount of people.
That's fine. That's something we can look at.
Okay, because it's unlawful. It's not right. Well, for instance, I'll give you an example, right? Say, for instance, I was a debt collector, right? And I went to your bank with a bit of paper, right? I'm a third-party interloper, right? I cannot verify the debt. I do not have first-hand knowledge. And I went into your account and told you I was taking your money and the bank gave it. But I've not verified the debt. And they've not verified the debt. How would you feel?
I wouldn't be very happy.
Exactly. I'm not trying to annoy you or upset you. I'm just trying to get answers for people I help every day on a day-to-day basis, you know?
And I've said I understand the situation and I've told you what the consumers can do, so I'm not quite sure what...
Okay, that's okay. That's all I wanted to ask. I'm not trying to cause the controversy. It's appreciated you've took time to speak to me.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your time. You have a good day.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Robert Sproul there. Excellent performance, mate. Really brilliant, that. That is, it's one of those things that you hear on PIR that you may think, oh, well, I got all that, but actually you can listen to it again and again. It is completely rich with, what I think to be extremely useful data, really. He's saying that you verify something by getting a wet signature bill and a contract. There is a school of thought that suggests that we should not ask for what does not exist just in case it pops up. However, it certainly seems to be Robert's experience that such things don't pop up. People are not going to be wanting to do that because they're going to be stepping into their own full personal liability if they do. And if it's true of the bank, which is a fictional entity and what Robert was specifically dealing with there, then you can be pretty sure it's also true of the Department of Human Services or Health and Human Services and the Department of Education and any other department you come across. There is no such thing as any of these entities, and anybody who claims that there is committing a fraud of sorts. We are men and women. We are not customers. We make claims. We don't complain. And one of the things that he established there is that a debt must be verified before a bank can touch your property. Rob says that the account belongs to the bank, but the money in it belongs to you, which is something I need to look in a bit further, but let's take that as right, because he's getting results. The money theoretically in the bank is your property. Nobody has a right to make a claim on that without first-hand knowledge and verification of the fact that a claim exists. Now, if it's true of the money, your property in the bank, it is also true of the children, your property in your home. There's no difference between the two things. So that massive document that we looked at earlier, what Rob's talking about when dealing with the bank, is applicable when we're dealing with any other kind of property. And it's not the bank that looks after people's money. It's certainly not fucking, well, it'd look after people's money, my arse. It's always men and women who are acting in roles who are doing that. And they're kind of responsible for what they're doing. So it's worth having a go at bearing that in mind. The same thing's true of the children. It's all men and women acting in roles. We've got duties and obligations if we're in the legal realm, but we have rights if we're in the lawful realm, and we only end up in the legal realm if we consent. As I say, I'm not sure whether the money's owned by the account holder or not. I had the general impression from what I've heard over the years that actually, as soon as you stick it under the green sheet of glass, it actually belongs to them, and that the only thing they're obliged to give you back is any interest on the account. But seriously, I hesitate to disagree with Rob on that one, but I think it's something that deserves a bit further investigation. So, all of that stuff applies as much to our offspring as it does to money in the bank. All of those techniques apply just as much. It's well worth looking them up. I thought when Rob asked her to define a bank, I thought that was great because she said that a bank is an organisation that looks after people's money. Well, I know. Who told you that? Eh? Who told you, the financial ombudsman, that a bank is an organisation that looks after people's money? And after your personal experience as somebody involved in the financial world of 2008, and I have no doubt your knowledge of things like the 1920s and the 1930s, is it your personal experience that a bank is an organisation that looks after people's money? I mean, is it? Please. You know, you're the financial ombudsman, aren't you? It's a difficult word, that, isn't it? I'm having problems with it as well. So he asked her, he said, without verifying the debt, well, she said, without verifying the debt, the bank should not be allowing money out of the account. And when Rob suggested to her that a third-party interloper who has no first-hand knowledge of the debt might turn up with a piece of paper, hand it over to her bank, and her bank goes, oh, yeah, not a problem, here you go. Have the wonga, as it were. But she said, I believe the bank should verify any amount they're debiting and get the customer's authority for that. Yes, that's what she said. I believe they should verify, and Rob's told you what verify means. Verify means providing a wet signature contract and a bill and a document of delegation if there's a third party involved, as in this imaginary example. So, and she was surprised, the financial ombudsman was surprised to find that people were having money taken out of their bank, which the banks weren't actually verifying. It seemed to come completely as news to her. It did. And like he said, well, taking stuff without consent is theft. That's a crime in law. And what we're saying is people are taking money out of the account without consent. And remember, under a lot of circumstances, the same things might apply to your offspring. So a third-party interloper with no first-hand knowledge of the debt gives a piece of paper to your bank, and the bank hands over the digits. How would you feel, he said. And she says, I wouldn't be very happy. She's the financial ombudsman. Everybody who's having money taken out of their bank account by way of reduction in benefits or fines or anything like that. And in fact, I would assume anybody who's having anything taken out of their so-called wages, the same thing applies. The debt must be verified. The obligation must be verified. With all of these things and with all of these entities, I wouldn't be very happy. And she's the ombudsman, you know? She's the ombudsman. So when you're talking about financial crime, which is one of the biggest bloody problems that we face, especially with the banks that are most assuredly not organisations that look after people's money, this is the person that you go, this is the individual that you go to. Once again, the system, the team that has put together the draft policy for family engagement in the early years up to the early grades is the same team that is providing you with ombudsman with that sort of attitude and knowledge level. And, you know, once you, all of this stuff, and there has been, I hope, and I intended a whole mass of it in this show, can only leave you with one course of action. Dr. Feelgood spotted it years ago. Dr. Feelgood, and that's it. I quit. It's a wrap. I don't want to see you anymore. Your choice. A bit of stuff in the chat box again. I meant to say, Rob, that was a really great interview with the phone call with the ombudsman. Really extremely well managed. And I thought she was pretty good as well. Same's true of a couple of the guys Rob spoke to in the DVLA. Extremely well trained, like Joe said. Stayed polite. You know, that's one of Simon Spanier's favourite ones when they lose their rag is, are you paid to talk to me like that? Uncle Freshie's put, she don't give a shit because she's customer care. Yeah, indeed. Customer care. How may we seem to help you? Customer care, as if, laugh out loud, says Newman. Well, that's it, isn't it? But It's up to us whether we get the care. Well, we get the care we deserve, and we're only going to get the care we believe deserve, we deserve when we stand up and take some sort of action. Knowledge without action is nothing. It surely is difficult to ignore the kind of stuff we've been talking about here. It really is. But there you go. I personally think that that here on PIR we have got a load of stuff which at least gives you a chance to stand your ground. It is your ground to stand in. It's not their ground. We need to stop working on the presumptions that they seem to insist we're working on. Lots more stuff in the chat box there, which I'm probably not going to have time to deal with. But anyway, absolutely bloody excellent spending the time with you. Thanks so many of you for being there. Still got about 36 in the chat box. Big thanks to the Kitchen Posse, which is in its enlarged state tonight. Hi, Clive, Philippa, Van, Barry, Jay, and Synchro. It's really great to know you're all out there. I will be joining you very shortly. I hope you enjoyed the show. Freeman Jack coming up on existentialism and nihilism in 20th century politics. You can't say we don't deal with the in-depth stuff here on People's Internet Radio. I'll be back with you next week. Who knows? I might actually have been able to, find a guest. It's really amazing. It's like trying to chase down bloody soap bubbles, it is. But, once they come, hopefully they'll come in as a nice rush and I can kind of put my feet up. In the meantime, I hope you enjoyed what me and Synchro and these various podcasters have done. Do take a listen to Robert Sproul. There's a lot of stuff there worth listening to. About 5 minutes more of Dr. Rock coming up before Freeman Jack. And I'm going to play out with Chris Rea, The Road to Hell, which is what we're on if we don't start taking some action. And then a really beautiful little 53-second Simon Spaniard pod called The Lion and the Ostrich, which I think is a bit of an allegory for, a bit of a natural allegory for how we might regard the situation. If we think that listening to Rob, we're thinking, oh, well, that's all just too much trouble. And we're thinking that all the stuff we've heard about on this show is really doesn't matter. You know, we can treat a load of stuff as that's obviously not true as true, and we can take all of that on board and we can just do nothing. I'm really not sure that that's a choice, guys. I think we really need to think very, very hard before we decide that we're not going to do the work. I do, because not doing the work has led to us being where we are. And whilst we're all happy in the now and the present moment and all that sort of stuff, I don't think there's many of us that can genuinely say that we're happy with what's being done in our name, with our consent and on our behalf. But hey, it's a game, isn't it? See you all next week. Coming up soon, Freeman Jack, 5 minutes from now. Don't touch that dial. Bye.
There's an ostrich and he's out and about and he sees a lion coming his way, okay? Now he thinks to himself, right, I could run for it, but I'm a bit scared. And, you know, perhaps if I don't look at him, maybe he won't see me. So the ostrich, not really knowing what to do, right, being a bit indecisive, a bit scared, decides to stick his head in the ground, okay, and just pretend that there is no lion. Now here's the question. Does that mean that the lion isn't there? And does it mean that the lion can't see the ostrich? And does it mean that the lion isn't going to pounce on the ostrich? Because from the lion's point of view, the lion sees a huge arse sticking out of the ground, waiting to be bit into, right?